Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Hello, is anybody here? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Not this again. I thought I got rid of this loser the last time he came around the space-time continuum.
Monitor?
No monitors here. We're off monitor game.
We kind of need you for the episode. I left a voicemail, and I hope you'd be here. Monitor?
Bite me, fanboy. Bite me long. Bite me hard.
Oh, good. There you are. Okay, good. We kind of need you to do the opening for the episode again. Sean's on again, and you did a really great one the last time. We kind of need you to
do it. Or the one after that. Probably not even the one after that.
That's insane. That's absolutely insane. We pay you good money to be on the show.
Sign me for that one special and it's over and done with. It's not in my damn contract to do anything else.
It's not in your contract to do more than one episode? What contract? We didn't sign a contract. I just paid you and you said you'd just be ready whenever I need you.
Look, I'm a monitor. If I say there was a contract, there was a damn contract, right?
It's episode 34 of Comic Time, and we've got Freddie E. Williams, we've got Sean Whalen, and we've got Raph on the episode doing New York Comic Con wrap-up, and I need the goddamn monitor. Now, what are you going to do about it?
I will jettison you through this damn airlock if I need to.
Oh, that's what you're going to do about it. Great. Terrific.
Would you like to try me on this? Because monitors really do not lie very often.
Are you going to re-say here now Comic Timing? Or are you just going to leave that to me?
Fine, if it gets you out of my hair, here now, Comic Timing. Happy now? Now get the hell out of my ship, or I will sick the apocalyptic dogs on you.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levenstein, and welcome to episode 34 of Comic Timing. This is part two of our New York Comic Con review, and let me introduce the regulars first. Well, a guy who's been on a couple times, and one of the first times in a while he's been on without his co-host, but he's here in spirit nevertheless. He, of course, is the master of the tweet-tweet-twiddly-dee, Sean Whalen, Dr. Norgian Forums. What's up, Sean?
I'm the master of the tweet, tweet, twiddly D.
Yes, you are.
No, I think you're referring to my co-host on that one.
Oh, no. But you're the one who likes it, so that's why you're the master of it, man.
I never said I liked the twiddly D.
Of course, it refers back to last episode, so.
Wait, just for the benefit of the people who are actually listening, if you don't know what this is all about, our first review on our very first episode almost a year ago now was about Shadow War of the Hawkman by Tony Isabella. And my co-host and I have a contention over Hawkman because he can speak to birds. And one of the things he said to the bird was, tweet, tweet. Which, it's a bird. What else are you going to say to him?
Hello, my name is Hawkman. Would you like a cookie? Apparently, that's what he'd rather him say. But
yeah.
But welcome back to the show, Sean. Always good.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Raph Suhu, a guy who never leaves. He's the Geeks Unite guy, and like I said, I try to throw him out a couple times, but he just keeps on coming back. What's up, Raph?
I'm the guy on the couch from Half Baked.
You just can't get rid of him.
Yeah, you never. Okay, yeah. I'm doing good. I'm about to record Geeks Unite episode 2 in a few days. Things are going all right.
Well, good. I'm glad that you're not recording it while we're recording this, because that would be awkward.
Oh no! But it is. I'm gonna edit this, and I'm just gonna cut your voice out, Ian, and that'll be Geeks Unite episode 2.
Oh, suddenly it all makes sense. Good to hear. We're also joined by a first-timer to Comic Timing, and that, of course, is Freddie E. Williams, the artist on Robin. And a guy who visited New York Comic Con and had a great time there. So, Freddie, what's going on your end, man?
Going pretty good. Just driving home after having an evening with my friend and listening to him play music. And thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. Sorry if the sound is a little bit fuzzy or anything.
That's fine, man. You sound good on this end. That's all that matters. I'm the guy who's recording. So it's all good for now. But recuperating from New York Comic Con, I think that's probably the best way for all of us to put it. And this is the wrap up of the wrap up pretty much. Oh jeez. Now, first of all, I want to poll the crowd here. Does anybody have this supposed New York Comic Con sickness that's been going around? Because it seems like there's at least like six or seven people on the forums who immediately after the Comic Con just got sick, incredibly sick.
No. Okay, I'm the one who started that. I was sick as a dog while at the con, and I shook hands with probably about, 150 people, because it's rude not to shake their hand, and quite honestly, I love meeting people and just talking comics and everything, but, I might have been giving everybody my head cold, because that's something that I was going to talk about later, but yeah, I'm the one who probably started that.
Oh my, wow. And we have the original person to track it down to on the show. Fantastic.
Well, either
Tommy exclusive.
Yeah, either that or just the fact that it was so damn cold there. I mean, a combination of the two probably, but like it was brutally cold. The wind whipping through Times Square when we were walking from our hotel room or whatever was just cutting me right in half,
Especially Saturday. Saturday was real bitter in the morning.
Oh, yeah. 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 And actually...
You weren't there Friday night, Sean.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Friday night,
we were waiting for the bus,
and the bus never came. So we ended up walking all the way over to a diner on about 8th Avenue and 34th. And dear God, it felt like any minute Auntie M was going to show up and we're all going to get blasted away to Oz.
See, I don't know what you guys are talking about. It was warm in Atlanta.
Yeah, Sean. Yeah, yeah. Explain this one to the listeners who might not have been listening to the regional ones, man. I'm sure you haven't talked about this enough.
We, Jim and I were supposed to arrive Friday morning at about 8 o'clock in New York. They changed our flight to an earlier time, and they wouldn't let us on the plane. So their solution to it was to route us to Atlanta, their hub, and they said there's a flight going out every hour. Well, they failed to tell us that flight going out every hour was overbooked throughout the entire day. So we spent 16 hours in the Atlanta airport and actually recorded a podcast there.
With awkward stares all along.
Hey, Sean, what airline did you fly?
AirTran.
Okay. Noted.
Yeah.
I just noted that.
Yeah, you know what? The funny part is we kept talking about how we were going to write a letter of complaint to AirTran. And I'm like, well, usually what they would do in that case is give you a free flight. I don't want that.
Yeah, that's like going to McDonald's and finding a bug in your food and then them saying, what, do you want some free food? It's like, no, I'm not sure what I want. I just wanted you to know that there was a bug in your food,
I want my 14 hours.
Would you
back.
Like some flies with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, and flies, airplane, it works perfectly. Yeah. But at least you were able to record an episode, man. I mean, at least you got that much out of it.
You have no idea how weird it is to be sitting there with people surrounding you, and you're talking about Brave and the Bold and how great it is with an eye river in front of you.
It came out pretty well.
Yeah, no,
it came out really well, actually.
Yeah, the sound quality, and that was actually surprisingly well for being in Atlanta. So,
well, you know what? I think we scared people enough that they were quiet, so it worked out all right.
And yet again, I'm reminded, how long did it take me to get to the convention? Well, you see, I hop on the Q train, and then I take it over to the 34th, and then I just walk a little bit, and then I'm there. Yep, yeah, really good trek for me. Yep.
Hey, nice,
that's right,
nice way to rub that
me.
In.
Oh, yeah. Come on, yeah. I have to. It's my home con. Although, it's even closer for Raph, so he can rub it in even more.
Yeah, you, me, and a brick that's the right, next boss. Time we're in New York.
I'll have the mace ready for Sean. Oh, whoa.
I was going to say that in 1 year, this recording is going to end up in some court report.
Sean Whalen.
Wait, Mr. Whalen assaulted Mr. Suhu.
Wait. Yeah.
Wait. It's going to be. Wait, it's going to be some irate Comic Timing listener that's like going to come after him now and blame it on me.
Oh, God. It's Comic
the
Noob Dyer.
Crime.
No, not Comic Noob Dyer.
Oh, no.
I kid.
That's
Comic
born
Noob
in
Dyer.
The 80s, folks.
I kid. Or it'll probably be Brent, actually, with all the comments that we've been making about him. But anyway, let's get the initial impressions of the convention, minus Friday for Sean, but for everybody else, it's Friday included. But let's start it off with you, Freddie. What was your impression of the con?
Well, of the con itself, first of all, I was pretty sick on Friday. Probably the only low point on Friday was that it was like, it seemed like on the upstairs area where the Artist Alley was, there's a lot of people who did not have to share an Artist Alley table. Now, I was fortunate enough to end up sharing it with Simone Bianchi, who is an awesome artist, and he's very funny just to hear him. He has a very funny sense of humor, but just space-wise, it would have been nicer to have just, you know, to just have one booth to me or one table, the whole thing be me, yeah. Be mine. But that wasn't even that really big of a deal. So quite honestly, it was the perfect size. Now, it's been years since I've been to, like, Chicago Con, but honestly, when I go to San Diego Con, I mean, I'm amused at the spectacle, but it's just too big for me. I mean, it's just too big for me, and there's so many things that are not comics, and I love comics, and I also love movies, but, you know, I'm not there to see the movie convention or the video game convention. I'm there to see the comic book convention. Yeah. So New York, though, it was the perfect size. If it was just slightly bigger, quite honestly, I don't want it to get much bigger. I think it was the perfect size, maybe just slightly bigger if it wants to grow because it, you know, whatever. But I thought this is how it should be done. You know, there's always going to be hiccups in every convention, but it was great.
And I'm sure that both Sean and I are saying in our heads right now, New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space from Wargaming Matinee in 2007. With all the time to read that. Oh, my God. But
yeah. Click on the banner and
go to NewYorkComicCon.com to reserve your tickets today.
Exactly. Go back and
I learned it, and I don't need it. I don't need it.
Yeah, right. But no, I agree with you on that, Freddie. It was pretty much the perfect size. I mean, when you compare it to last year, oh my God, it is so much of an improvement over last year. And it's certainly growing pains to have that first con and realize that it was much, much, much too small for a convention of this size. I mean, it's New York City. You're expecting every single nerd and geek from the New York area to show up, along with people coming from all over the country, and sometimes even from other countries, to show up.
Yep.
And the fact that they did not expect that the first year amazed me. They had, like, the bottom space, that whole basement area where they had panels. That was actually where they had the con last year. It was all on that first
floor. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was, oh, my God, fire hazards and cramping everybody in. The artist alley was at the same place as the show floor, so you had to literally squeeze in to get to the artists. And, oh, my God, it's such an improvement this year over last year. And, Raph, you were there last year also, right?
Yeah, I was there all 3 days. Well, okay, I was there Friday and Sunday on the floor, and Saturday I couldn't get in. I went to a lot of panels instead. I think it was a huge improvement. I think that they did a lot of work. It was really good. Actually, I agree with Freddie that they need more space for Artist Alley. It was a decent amount of space, but every time I tried to get from Artist Alley to Podcast Arena, it was just a lot longer than it took to get from the rest of the con to the rest of the con.
Yeah.
So I think they actually should have used the basement space that they had last year and used that for Artist Alley, because I think you could have gotten a lot more artists. I mean, there was a huge amount of artists, but, like, Freddie could have gotten his own table that way, and like, you could have had so many more artists down there. And, I mean, there was a fair amount of artists, but I think even last year they had more. I'm not too sure. But I have to admit, it's really good for just the second year. And I think it's a pretty decent size, but I think they need to become the San Diego East, you know?
Yeah, they do. And because, I mean, this is probably the one that's the biggest size to be as San Diego East. And plus, well, what's the biggest place on the East Coast, New York. So it makes sense for it to be centered over there. I mean, Baltimore Comic Con, it's a great convention. Don't get me wrong. I loved Baltimore Comic Con, but Baltimore Comic Con is minute in size compared to what New York Comic Con already is. So New York definitely has a chance of being the San Diego of the East, and it's really weird saying the word San Diego of the East.
You know, touching on something that Freddie said, though, I totally agree that the focus should remain comics, though. I think a lot of times, there was the right amount of mix of, like, other media besides comics without going too far to the point where it's almost unrecognizable as a Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So I really thought that was a key to this one. I'm not knocking it in any way. I actually thought there was a really nice balance. And if there's going to be some growth, I would like to make sure that growth remains as balanced as it felt this time around.
I agree.
Oh, definitely. And an agreement here as well. Yeah. In fact, actually, I would actually like to see a little bit more of an increase, at least on the sellers, because we didn't get a lot of the comic book booths in the actual, Dior level. It was mostly, that's where we got all the entertainment. That's where we got, like, the video games and we got the, the DVDs and all that. But there were maybe, like, $4 bins in the entire section, and only, like, two of them were actually worth putting your, fingers through. There were a couple of other sellers, but they were selling new books. No joke on this. My girlfriend went to get herself a copy of the latest issue of New Avengers. They were already selling it for $3.50. It just came out last week. So that's one thing I hate seeing at a con, guys who think that just because they're at a convention, they can inflate their prices. But there were some decent dollar bins. I'd like to see some more dollar bins next year. I'd like to see perhaps more of a comic selling area, because it seemed like that wasn't really the focus of the floor. And I'd like to see more of that. And I don't know whether or not anybody really agrees with that over here, but I'd like to see more of that just as a fan myself.
Ian, just to admit, you're the only person I sold that New Avengers to for $3.50.
Oh, damn.
So,
yes, the DC Comics fan podcast is selling me New Avengers. Let's just think about that.
Well, yeah, but at an inflated price. I gave you a deal on 52.
I remember, just now, whenever you were saying that there wasn't enough dealers or whatever, there was somebody, I was selling the newest copy of Robin at my booth, and somebody said, "How much are these?" And I said, $3.50. Or I'm sorry, $3. And they were like, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah." And they were like, "Really?" Like, they seemed real surprised by that. And at the time, I thought, "Yeah, that's like cover price, you know." But I guess maybe they went downstairs and saw that it was marked up. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess you're a real selling point. I mean, seriously though, I mean, to mark up brand new comics that literally came out a week before, that just, I don't know, that just boggles my mind when I see people actually doing that. And yeah. I'm glad to see deals on stuff. I mean, I was able to get plenty of great comics for deals, but you got to go to Jim Hanley's or something like that when you're in the city just to get the comics when they're coming out. Because again, the entire weekend they were having a 20% off sale. So you could have just stopped by there, even, and gotten your stuff. So that just proves something there.
Hey, you know what? Yeah. After Monday, everybody's going to want Robin 159, because wait till you hear what we did with that one.
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah, that was a that was a good podcast. That was a good episode.
Okay, now you're teasing me, damn you.
No, we seriously had a lot. It's seriously, just to plug Freddie's book, Robin 159 is a phenomenal issue, and we had a lot of fun chatting about it. So if you're not reading Robin right now, you should be reading Robin. The writing's top-notch, the art is top-notch, it's just a great book.
Yeah, read yourself awesome. Some Robin, read yourself some all-new Adam, and just applaud those people that are nice to the podcast. That's all good for me.
Is that the one with the date night?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
The 159?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I picked it up from Freddie. I haven't read it yet. I'm looking forward to that, actually.
And see, picked it up from Freddie.
I haven't read
it. There you go. How much did you pay? $3.
Got it signed. $3. No, I paid $2.99 and I left Freddie that penny because I donate to the cause.
What a nice guy.
You know what? I have a question for Freddie, actually, though. How was the traffic in Artist Alley? How was the traffic from all the people in Artist Alley? Were you getting a lot of people stopping by? How did that work out?
Oh, yeah, I was overwhelmed by the number of people that were asking for commissions, that wanted commissions. And, I mean, and also I was getting lots of, there was just so much foot traffic that was coming through there that it was like a total sensory overload, you know what I mean? Like, because if someone walks up to my table, I want to acknowledge, that they're there and, just be friendly. I don't want to be a jerk like I'm just where they just see the top of my head,
Yeah.
I just tried to, Kiki, my wife, who was there, she was doing a good job of initiating conversation and stuff. But anyway, yeah, the traffic through there was really, really thick, especially on Saturday. And with me sitting right next to Simone, I mean, he was a very, he's a very popular artist. So there was a lot, I was getting kind of like residual foot traffic, kind of blocked up around that as well, where there was a line kind of forming from his stuff. And then those same people would end up looking at my stuff. So that was pretty good, too.
And say what you will about you know, how much space you had to walk around the Artist Alley and all that, I love the placement of Artist Alley, Podcast Arena, Gaming Arena. That was done really well, because you had the foot traffic pretty much of, you know, if the gamers wanted to get through to the gaming area, they would have to go through the Artist Alley, and they might find a comic that they might not have been interested in before that they might have been interested in now, or an artist that they might not have expected and stop by, or they go through the Podcast Arena and they find a podcast that's brand new. It was a great way to garner up people that were going there for everything and have them stop at other places.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think, I mean, the foot traffic was very conducive to getting people to see that the artists existed there, so that people could see what artists were there, and if they knew us, then they would stop in, you know?
Without a doubt, definitely. Did you have a lot of people show up, Freddie, that did not know your work ahead of time, that were just, like, drawn by perhaps the Robin issue sitting on your table?
I'm not sure. If so, then they did a good job of covering it, because there was, it seemed like a lot of people who would, you know, and it would be totally easy to do this, but at the time I was a total sucker for it, but it's like where they see me and they go, "Hey, Freddie, I'm a big fan of your Robin art, but I've got a sign there that says Freddie Williams, artist for Robin. I've got Robin, you know, comics sitting on my table." So it'd be really easy if they didn't know who I was, but just because they were standing in front of my booth or they were waiting to get to Simone or something like that, maybe they did that. I'm not sure. There was lots. I guess I'm a suspicious person. I just assumed that there was a lot of those people, because it's always surprising to me to meet people who are actually followers or whatever, readers of my work, specifically for my work. That's a real, that's an adjustment period. You know what I mean? I'm still in that adjustment period to realize that people actually would do that. So I just always assume, or I'm always suspicious, that when they say I'm a big fan of your work, that they're just saying that because they're standing in front of me, as opposed to really meaning it, you know? So, I don't know. Lots of people seem like they knew who I was, but who knows if they actually did. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, see, next time what you do is you intentionally put the wrong name and the wrong art on there, and then you'll know for certain. It's like, oh yeah.
You could do.
Oh, Billy West, I love your voice as Fry. Actually, I'm Freddie Williams. I do Robin. Oh.
Or you can get J.H. Williams' art. You can get J.H. Williams from Seven Soldiers and put his books up there. And they'll go, "Yeah, you did Seven Soldiers." You go, "No, I did Robin." Thank you.
But actually, I did do a few issues of Seven Soldiers, Mr. Miracle. So, but yeah, there's lots of people who confuse my name with J.H. Williams, because I'm the second and he's the third, so they see those Roman numerals and, you know, our last names are the same, so it gets a little confusing.
But I gotta tell you, there's a lot of Williams in the world of comics.
Yeah, Scott Williams, there we go.
Yeah, I mean, Bernie Williams, oh, wait, never mind.
No, he's sitting at home playing guitar.
Oh, he might get a contract.
Yeah, he is, well, you know.
Yeah, but he's not as
good.
Yeah, Braves
right down. Now, but... Yes, this is a New York Yankees podcast.
Oh, of course it is. No. That was the last podcast I did. But Sean, as a podcaster, because I want to get everybody's perspective on this. I want to get the artist, the podcaster, and the attendee. Pretty much the same sort of question that I asked Freddie, only geared towards podcasters. You get a lot of people who had never heard of the podcast before that stopped on by, and hopefully get some new listeners out of that.
Yeah, I thought one of the nice things about the Podcast Arena was that, you know, our tables were all next to each other or across from each other.
Yeah.
So as people were going by, it was really nice because a new person could kind of flow between each of the tables and kind of get a feel for what we were all about. I think we were all doing a little bit of cross-promotion for each other as we were chit-chatting, you know, just kind of when a new person came by, just kind of explaining what the Podcast Arena was, who we all were, figuring that, you know, for example, in my case, if the person wasn't a DC fan, they've got lots of options around us of people who, you know, they could listen to.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and vice versa, you know, if they were over at Bullpen Bulletins, I know those guys weren't hesitating to recommend my podcast for people who maybe are DC fans. I think we, and the great thing about, like, your show and Comic Geek Speak and Around Comics, there were, and Pop Cult, and Bruce's Comic Cast, there were so many podcasts there that covered all of comics that it was easy to refer people around the whole place. I mean, you know, we even had video podcasts there with Variant Edition.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just such a great thing. And Joe and Jimmy were, like, phenomenal hosts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, props to them for getting everything together. Yeah, the geek together and the arena itself. Oh, and the prizes, yeah. I mean, Raph went away with, I think, got most of DC's comics in that raffle, so.
I won a lot.
As a podcaster, though, I thought the podcast arena was really nice. I thought there was they certainly gave us plenty of space, and I thought it was very generous for them to take this kind of risk. Because really, we were an experiment, you know, to have us out there, and I really applaud them for taking a chance on putting podcasts as a featured area in the New York Comic Con, because they really gave us a decent amount of floor space.
Oh, sure they did, yeah. And from the sounds of things, I mean, from what I heard from the Comic Geek Speak episode that they just did on New York Comic Con, apparently I haven't got a chance to actually contact Phoenix yet, but Phoenix says that there was a lot of praise to the podcast arena and that they want to expand it next year. So, I mean, apparently we hopefully hit it off there. So, I mean, the more the merrier, and hey, the more space the better, which means more podcasts. Like, Geeks Unite will have a space, so.
Hopefully.
Yeah, right.
Just from a creator standpoint, or an artist standpoint, rather, podcasts are awesome because, I mean, I love music, but it's not like the music necessarily is talking about comic books. I mean, it invokes a certain emotional energy that can sometimes come through in the artwork or keep me motivated or something, but it is great to listen to podcasts that it's like listening to just a bunch of buddies. It's like having a conversation or hanging out with people, but you can do it, you know, you can hit pause or hit play anytime you want to, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, there, at least from my point of view, there's not the pressure to interact, because whenever I have friends over, I feel like I'm a bad host if I'm just sitting there drawing, although I still have to do that sometimes. and then Kiki, my wife, she has to play hostess or whatever, so... Anyway, podcasts are a great thing. I know that just comic book fans love them too, but just from a creator standpoint, having like a 2 or with Raging Bullets, 5-hour chunk of podcast.
Wait, Freddie, you gave us 8 hours. wait, and that's not an exaggeration.
That's beautiful.
But having a chunk. Having a chunk of time like that is a blessing, you know, to be able to listen to that, because it you know, it's just fun. I don't know. I guess that'll be the end of my statement there, other than just to say I think that's why, or part of the reason why the podcast stuff has been so cool and why it did so well at the New York Con, just because it's a great tool to keep the geeks together, you know, it makes the world smaller.
Yeah. You know what, another thing I really felt too is just to kind of branch off of that, this con, everybody from the Artist Alley to the podcast arena to people on the floor, it felt very laid back. And I don't mean that in any way in a negative. I at no point in time did I feel like anybody was frustrated or anything. As I walked down, like, Artist Alley, everyone just seemed genuinely friendly. When I was walking through the podcast arena, everyone seemed to be having a good time. It was like a very relaxed con. You know, you usually see people like frantically doing all kinds of different things, and I never got that impression at any point in time. I mean, I don't know how you guys felt about that, but for me, I mean, especially with considering all the people there, and I think it does have something to do with the increased space of this year. It just seemed like easier for everybody to get from point A to B. And, I mean, I wasn't there last year, so I can't comment on that, but just from what I heard, and just from my personal experience this year, it just really felt very relaxed. It was like people were genuinely glad when you walked up to their tables, and it just was a lot of fun.
Well, you know what, actually, that I think that has a lot to do with the fact that, again, this just goes with this again, but the fact that the Artist Alley was separate from the main floor, the fact that you had different people who might have just been looking for artists up in the Artist Alley, and you had the guys who were looking for the entertainment stuff and that sort of stuff downstairs, because that way, not everybody was grouped together in one space. You know, you weren't fighting with people who were trying to get a comic from the dollar bin when you're going to see Jim Lee. You know, that sort of thing. Signings were a lot easier to get to at this con than they were at the last one. And just stopping to talk to a creator was a hell of a lot easier, because last year, when I went to stop and talked with Mike Norton for a while, I bumped into about 7 people who were trying to get by me, just trying to get to a booth. And that's not something you got this year. You know, you had enough space where you'd be able to just stop, talk, and enjoy, and then move on to the next person whenever you wanted to. And that's an important part of a convention. The interaction is as important as being there. And you had that at this con a lot more than you have at other cons, at least from the experience that I've had. So, Raph, you agree with that?
Yeah, I do have one small complaint, though. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I was on the show floor a grand total of 2 hours in 3 days. That's my only complaint. It's just that, well, I mean, really, it has nothing to do with the floor setup. It has to do with the fact that this year's New York Comic Con for me was about the podcaster, meeting all the podcasters and just hanging out with Sean, Jim, Ian, like everybody, just meeting everybody for the first time. This was the podcaster convention for me, you know. It was a great setup when I was down on the floor. At certain points when it was peak hours, obviously it was very crowded, but I still navigated fairly quickly. I didn't bump into anybody. The rows and spaces were actually very nice.
So where was your complaint?
My complaint is that I didn't get to go down. I don't know.
Okay, here's my gripe actually, and this is something that sort of stems off of that. The fact that there was one entrance, that is my major gripe with the entire convention. The fact that there were people being turned away, and mind you, they were nice enough when I had my laptop with me and a couple of my bags with me. They just let me go through because they saw my press badge. But then immediately after that, they completely changed their tone and were like, no, you got to go this way. There was one guy on Friday, and Raph knows who I'm talking about here because, oh my God, this guy, I swear to God, this man does not deserve to have a job. It's as simple as that, because he had this scowl on his face. And it might actually be the same guy that CGS was talking about who apparently harassed Carmine Infantino at one point. But the fact is, he had this look on his face like this. Literally, like you can actually see what I'm doing right now. He looked like an angry dog, okay, about to pounce. And whenever you would even come close to going in the other exit, he would just scream, "You don't go that way! That's it!" And
Yeah.
You know the guy I'm talking about. There we go. Because
I remember him.
That's not the way you treat guests. You know, if you're trying to direct people off to another exit, if you're going in the wrong way, say, "I'm sorry, you have to go this way." It's just as simple as that. And because of that, you know, it aggravated me. It aggravated other people as well. And he talked back to us when we were talking just amongst ourselves. My girlfriend made a comment. "Well, this is kind of silly to have the entrance over here." He talked back. He said, "Well, that's the way it is. So deal with it." And then we kept on moving. You know, when you're the security guard, that's what you are. You know, I mean, tell people, you know, where you're going to go, but, you know, don't do any lip about it. It doesn't make any sense. This guy just felt like he did not belong in the position that he was in. And eventually, I had to become a lawbreaker, as it were. On about three different occasions, I had to run up the down escalator to get back upstairs because there was really no other way to do it. And they didn't have anybody posted over there, so it's not like I was, you know, like being like naughty, 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 don't do that again by anybody. But you shouldn't really have to be forced to do that at any convention.
Yeah, I had to do it once or twice.
I love the fact that you're still saying naughty, naughty, naughty.
No, but I mean, you get the idea, though. I mean, the fact that there was one up escalator and there were three down escalators. There's no reason to really have that at the convention. Have other ways to get upstairs, or else you're going to have these backups, which there were getting up to the show floor. So that's my major gripe. I mean, were there any gripes you had about the layout itself, Sean?
You know, not really. I mean, not having exposure to last year, I guess. I heard so many bad things about last year as far as the layout and how cramped everything was that I think you walk in with an impression that there's going to be a lot of inconveniences. And I totally agree with Freddie in the sense that I really liked having Artist Alley up in its own area. I've been to cons before where Artist Alley's like shoved in a corner.
Yeah.
And as a fan, when you're trying to find artists, you can't even find like there's like Artist Alley's been in two different spots, you know, where there's like one Artist Alley over on the left side of the con floor. Then there's another one over to the right that you like can't really get to, if I'm making any sense there.
Yeah.
And it was nice to have everybody in one location. You knew if you were looking for an artist. The only thing I would even say, and this isn't really a gripe, it's something I think you don't see at many cons, I would like when you go into Artist Alley for there to be a directory right there of artists that are in Artist Alley. So like you, as you're walking, like you go into a mall and see where, you know, right, because I can't tell you how many people came to our podcast table asking where artists were. And this isn't a knock on New York Comic Con. I think cons in general don't do this in Artist Alley. How cool would it be when you walk right in to just have the artist and here's the tables that they're at?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, that would be, I just think that's a small thing that as a fan, and like I said, it's a very minor gripe, but it's a small little thing that I think would help some of the artists that people didn't even realize were there. Because through conversations we had in the podcast arena, you know, you'd start talking about an artist or an inker or, you know, somebody who was over in Artist Alley, and somebody go, they're here? and see that. But, I mean, that to me at a convention, at a comic convention, should be something that's broadcast. And, again, like I said, I'm not singling out New York Comic Con for this because I really did like their layout for Artist Alley.
Yeah.
It's just I would love to see conventions in general take a step towards just putting up, you know, like I said, like they do at a mall, mm-hmm. where you can walk right in, see a little quick directory, and just find whoever you're looking for and maybe find some people that you didn't know were going to be there.
Yeah. And not even just in the Artist Alley, it would be nice to have downstairs also just a simple map of where things are so that you don't have to go into your program booklet to find everything. Because there were often times when I didn't have my bag with me and I didn't have my program booklet with me, and I had no idea where the hell I was going downstairs. You know, it was an absolute crapshoot to find what I was looking for. I went the entire weekend without finding the Marcosia booth. And I had wanted to stop by and say hi to Chuck at one point, but I was so, like, all over the place the entire con that I really didn't get a chance to do so. I found Uncle Sal at the Atomica booth, but that's really it, because he was over at the Alex Ross booth, so that was a lot easier to find. But so many places that I wanted to hit up downstairs and at Artist Alley that I could not find because there was not a simple directory. So, again, a simple improvement, so I'm totally with you on that, Sean. Just have some sort of, like, mall map or mall outline that you can follow, both for downstairs and upstairs. It'll make everybody's life a lot easier.
Quite honestly, I mean, I got to see, I walked around the convention on Friday, Friday morning, whenever it was still relatively light as far as traffic. I mean, I was surprised by how many people were there when they didn't consider it open yet to the public. I was like, this isn't open yet, you know? But because my commission list had already pretty much filled up or whatever. But when I got to go downstairs for my signings at DC, that was about the only time I really saw the rest of the convention. And I didn't have a whole lot of complaints other than just that I didn't have enough time to do it, I guess. And that's not – actually, that can't even really be a complaint. I guess any other comments, you know, I just wasn't around it as much as I would have liked to have seen more of it. But, yeah, I guess that a directory would have been pretty good because I had a hard time finding the Marcosia booth because I did a signing there on Sunday for about 45 minutes or something like that, and I did have a hard time. I ended up just calling Chuck, and I was like, where are you guys? You know, the DC booth was conveniently located right next to the escalators. I mean, it was like the first booth you came to if you were on that far end.
Yeah.
And, you know, right from Artist Alley, you just take a right down the escalator, and then, you know, from the escalator, and then you're right there. So I didn't get to see a whole lot of it, though.
I did enjoy the plush carpeting.
Very good.
Very soft on the feet, exactly.
Yeah, how'd you feel about the curtains?
the curtains were just so bourgeois.
Yeah, I know. So those podcast curtains that you guys had, it wasn't that good.
No. Well, see, the one thing that also, I love this, I actually put up for you, Sean, a 1 year later poster on Friday when I thought you guys were going to be there. And it fell down, and when I came back on Saturday, it was gone. So I'm like, why not? I'll share this with Sean's booth. And then I realized, wait a minute, Sean's not going to be here. And that 1 year later poster is now lost to me. It's somewhere in the garbage, somewhere at the Javits Center. So
Quesada ripped it up.
Oh.
Well, it's, you know, what happened to Raging Bullets on the missing day? You know, it's like,
52.
Actually, I left something there, too. These are my two main gripes with the con, and it has nothing to do with the con, really. The first one is that it's over. It was only 3 days, not the rest of my life.
Yeah.
What the hell? That's wrong. And the second one is I happened to help out Chris from Around Comics for a little bit. He wanted me to do some announcements at Carmine Infantino's table, so I said, fine, no problem. It was 5 minutes, no big deal. And so he walks over to the Raging Bulls table and gives Sean a signed poster by Carmine. And then he walks over to where I'm sitting and goes, here, Raph, you know, thanks for yesterday. And he gives me it's like number 200-something out of 500. It's beautiful. I went to get I bought a tube for Sean to put his in. I bought one for mine. And I'm packing. I'm leaving the con at 5 o'clock. And Ian, I don't know if you noticed, but I wasn't carrying my tube.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
oh, I just realized. Oh, dude.
I didn't have my tube, so I left my Carmen Infantino signed poster there. And I'm you know what? I sincerely hope someone picked it up and took it with them. I'd rather that than someone just threw it out. Because I really, you know, that was my big disappointment with the con, actually. Besides the fact that it's over.
Well,
and to
make this joke for about the 12,000th time, maybe somebody just used your tube for the internet.
Yeah.
You know, Raph, I gotta say something though. I thought it was a bit much that you were bringing luggage in on Sunday.
Wasn't that a little weird?
Yeah. I gotta echo his sentiments exactly though. Like Sunday, and it wasn't even just because we weren't there Friday. Sunday when it was over, I was kind of like already.
Yeah.
Totally agreeing with you, Raph. It was so great hanging out with all you guys. It was great to see all the artists and Artist Alley. Like I said, this felt like such a relaxed con that it was just fun to be there every day, even though it was very busy. And by Sunday, I was very tired. And I think we all probably were feeling the same way.
Oh, yeah.
I really felt, though, that everyone was just genuinely nice. I didn't get any impression of, inside the con at least, once you got through the doors. I really felt that everyone were just really pleasant, considering, you know, that we're all in a con and waiting in lines and doing all those crazy things that you do at cons. I really enjoyed myself overall, so I got to agree with you. It ended too soon for no reason other than it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. I left something behind too, Rav, so you can feel okay about that. I actually, for the past 3 days, couldn't use my laptop because I left the cord at the Javits Center.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, luckily it came in the mail today. It was only about $6 off of some website that I found off of Frugal. So, that was a pain in the ass because I get home and I'm like, where's the plug?
And I don't know how much it's going to cost to replace that. Okay. It was the thought that counts. I mean, the fact that yeah, Chris even, you know, deemed me worthy of one of those was incredible.
Wait, here's the funny part. When Ian was telling his story, I'm like, Javits made you pay to get your cord back? I'm
like, you have to pay the shipping.
I went to www.heresyourdamnstuffback.com.
They should have that.
Oh, hell
you know,
yeah.
People should register like hospitals and stuff. If anybody's lost this here,
dude,
you know, just
do you
online.
Know how much money you would make off of a www.lostandfound.com?
Yeah, I know. It would be incredible.
It would be like Craigslist, only you're just posting things that you found at random places. Like, if you want this back, here's how much to pay. There you go.
One year later,
that sounds like it's like ransom. Isn't that like holding it for ransom?
Maybe.
Oh, no, see, it's not like the guys who have it are going to send it to me, and then I'm going to send it out to the guys who originally owned it. It's just, you know, reporting that it's out there.
Oh, right,
you know?
Right, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, reporting. That's exactly what it is, Raph. Right. Sure. Yeah. Raph likes stealing things.
I do. Oh, I stole on our way out, I took a bunch of people.
Yes,
I took someone's
yes.
exhibitor pass, and I took someone's sign. That said, Rick Vetch and the devil were off at table A139 or something like that. Just other artists'
what
garbage. Because I'm that fanboy. I pick up your garbage,
hey,
you know?
Hey, look, at least you're not as evil as I am. And again, I've told this story on the podcast before, but I have about two tumblers from Baltimore that I got from the Harvey Awards that were left behind on people's tables because for some reason they didn't want them. So my girlfriend and I just sort of like stare at each other and they're like, meh. So we took two tumblers each and we both had some joyous tiramisu from the leftovers there. So it's like, hey, if these people are going to leave them behind, the more the merrier for us. So yeah, I'm a mooch. What can I say? And those tumblers are being used for beer and soda on a regular basis, so I am using them for a good
Very
cause.
Nice.
It's all good, yes. Yeah. Freddie, like you said before, you hadn't really been ironed down to a table before, and I asked you early on Friday what it was like, so I'd love to get your take now, you know, after it's all over and done. Did it feel weird to be sort of like trapped at that table for all weekend?
Yeah, because, okay, again, you know, it had been a while since I'd been to the Chicago Con, so my only real comparison to the New York Con would be the San Diego Con, and I didn't have an Artist Alley table there, And so I was pretty much nomadic. You know, I just kind of roamed around. I would sign at the DC booth and then just kind of bide my time until it was time to sign at the Marcosia booth. And then I'd, you know, go to a panel or something, you know, just to watch, not that I was involved in the panel, and then I'd go home. So there wasn't anything wrong. It was just an unusual experience to not be trying to wade through a million other people and to have a central place where people could actually find me, where it wasn't just like I was running into people. So it was a, it wasn't a bad thing. It was just an unusual thing, I guess, more than anything, you know?
Yeah. No, I understand that because I've never had a table before. So it felt really, really weird. That's probably my best way to put it. And Sean, I don't know if you felt the same way, but it's like I'm sitting there and I'm like, I don't deserve this. I'm like, you know, I'm some dude who just like happens to talk and, you know, have fun doing so and puts it out on the internet. And here I am, you know, sitting here, you know, giving out my stuff to people and all that. It was a completely different experience. I never felt that way before at a con. You know, being able to sit down for one, because that's so hard to do at a convention. That's why you go to panels, so you can rest your feet for a while. But
yeah,
the fact that you have the table there and you're realizing that, wow, people are stopping by to say hi to you or to check out exactly what you're doing. It feels so different than just being there as a spectator. And it was my first time really experiencing that. I mean, I was fanboying over it. It's like, oh my God, I'm actually sitting here. I'm at New York Comic Con and I'm at a table and I'm sitting here. Oh my God. It was incredible. It really was. It's an experience I'll never forget.
And you know, I really felt too that everyone who would normally be at a con was incredibly generous to us being there. You know what I mean? In the sense that I never felt like anyone was like walking by with their noses up in the air at like, look at the little podcast people or anything like that. People went out of their way. Yeah. People went out of their way. I really felt to be, you know, to stop by, say hello. You know, I'm talking about, you know, artists, exhibitors, you know, different things like that were very generous with us as far as really how they treated us, because I really had a great time overall. I really felt like I was part of the con, and I really felt that the New York Con took a big risk, and yep. I'm thrilled that they're happy with it, because I thought it was a very rewarding experience. I thought it was a great way to do cross promotion on the con, and I'm hoping, you know, that they do it again next year, that they even bring us more into the promotion aspect of the con, because I felt that towards the end when we were getting ready for the con, I would have liked even more information on who was going to be at the con to like pump that up even more.
Well, I mean, the fact that I didn't actually change promos until the last week felt really weird to me, because I'm like, okay, I went from like a 30-second promo to like a minute and 15. Not Phoenix's fault at all, but she had the wrong email address for my email. So I didn't actually get the promo until that last week. That's why what everybody else was doing there, you know, new promos with the Sci-Fi Friday Night and all that, I was still behind with New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space. So, you know, it felt really odd changing at the last second there. And just in general, it feels like an entirely new level. Just being able to know that these guys are putting their time and basically their money on the line because they pay for the space. So if Podcast Arena had sucked, that's their money down the drain right there. You know,
yeah.
they paid for us.
And I think they looked at it, though, as they really paid for advertising from us.
Yeah.
And I really hope that it was great that there were people who stopped by our tables that said that they came because they heard about the con on a podcast.
Yeah.
Because I'm glad, I feel like we at least contributed something to the number of people that were at the con. Because that's what it's all about. It's about promoting. That's why I said I'd like next year to have even more information at my disposal as far as who's actually going to be at the con and what events are going to be at the con, because I'd like to do more to support them. Because I really felt that was one of the strengths of having us involved, was that we could do some promotion for them. And I'm glad that they took that chance and used us for that purpose.
Yeah, and also the best publicity we could have all weekend was Raph's shirt, so.
Yes, the shirt of many podcasts. Very nice shirt.
You know, when I saw that for the first time and I saw your press hat with, like, the glasses and all that, I'm like, wow, it's super podcast, man.
Yes, that's right.
We were trying to get him hung up at the entrance to the podcast arena, but they wouldn't let us.
So that was you behind the rope, Sean. Actually, no. I think that as the newest podcaster out of a group of people here that's not professional, and as a fan, I think it was great that Podcast Arena existed, because I finally got to meet Sean and Jim. I finally got to meet the CGS guys. You know, a bunch of people that I didn't meet. I have some stuff signed by Sean and Jim and by the Around Comics folks, and it's just kind of weird to kind of go up to someone I've been listening to and someone who, people who I consider friends and people who I've known, and go, can you sign this? You know, it was like being a fanboy to the fanboys, and it was just this, it was a weird thing. It was a nice feeling.
Yeah, it was really weird, yeah. Actually, after Ghost Rider, Raphael came up to me with his, you know, Ghost Rider stub and said, oh my God, Ian, can you sign this? You totally sat next to me.
Dude, you do the Geek Speak Report. You got a scientist, man.
I'm flaming. cracks him up every time. Wow. Inside jokes in podcasting. That's what you gotta love.
I was like in awe when you asked me to sign your shirt.
Oh, yeah, well, Sean, I mean...
No. I don't mean that in any way as a negative, dude. I mean, you made, like, my whole weekend. I'm like, you want me to what? I'm like that. Well, I'm totally saying that in a complimentary way to you, because it was like I was in awe, not because, you know, there's anything wrong with you asking. I was like, you actually want me to do this? I'm like, thank you. That was really cool.
I think it's cool to just actually see the voices that I'm used to hearing. It's weird, like I met Peter Rios for the first time, even though I have been on Comic Geek Speak a few times, and I've even been in their studio in Brian Deemer's house. Peter Rios was away that weekend, and just to meet him and to, you know, I'm used to his voice, I know his voice, but to see his face make the voice was strange. It was this weird feeling, you know what I mean, to see that. I don't know. It was like I had the instinct to, like, want to look away and just listen to what they're saying. You know what I mean? It's like this weird, I don't know. That sounds really weird.
Exactly the way that I felt on Saturday when Sean and Jim reenacted episode one. So.
Oh, my. That was beautiful. I cried tears of joy.
Oh, man.
I got to see episode one. That's such a privilege. Oh, my God.
Hey, Jim, master of animal husbandry, sensei of the whatnot segula.
Actually, what's funny is I've met Peter Rios before at Marseille, and I hadn't met the other geeks, so that's kind of weird.
Yeah, well,
one that I did meet.
Yeah, and you met Freddy, so everything was completed.
You know what I like now, though? I like the community aspect of comics right now.
Yeah.
I think through the internet and through podcasts and through all that, I think we have an opportunity now as fans to be able to join together and appreciate this medium in such a way that we weren't able to before. I think we're able to turn each other onto books. I think we're able to just really... Because before, comics were a very isolated hobby. You know, I mean, how many people did you talk to growing up about comics? Very small amount of people, you know, actually read comics that I knew. I had one friend of mine who was very into comics, and nobody else was. So I didn't, you know, have an outlet to chat about comics and about these things that are important to me, and they remain important to me. So it's nice now to be able to go to something like this and to be able to have an instant connection with people because we've been talking through this means, or we've been talking on websites or in forums or, you know, whatever. And just really, it's increased my appreciation for the medium as a whole, because you can talk about it and reminisce about it and get something more out of the books than you've ever gotten before out of them. And that, to me, is one of the keys now in what we've got here. Yep. And I want more people to experience this, because I do still believe that comics are an independent medium as a whole, and I think it's disgusting because of the amount of product out there right now. Comics cover every genre imaginable, and comics as a whole should be up there in bookstores. They should be mixed in with the regular books, and people should be going to these cons who never imagined reading a comic book before, because this is just a great time to be a fan.
Oh, it certainly is.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well said.
Woohoo!
Okay, and I'm done. That was it for me, so I'll see you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sean has left the building.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, I know exactly how you feel there, because last year, at last year's New York Comic Con, I was there with a couple of friends, and then after Friday, I'm not going to go completely in-depth as to what happened, but the long and short of it is that my girlfriend, who was not my girlfriend at the time, got injured on Friday coming out of a diner, and on Saturday, it was pretty much just me walking around by myself. And I was getting interviews and all that for Geek Speak at the time because that's what I was doing then. And, you know, that was all well and good, but it was just me. You know, I really didn't have that much of a community sense yet. I'd only known the geeks really from episode 100, so I wasn't nearly as comfortable hanging out with them as I would be now. And I felt like it was just, you know, just me at a con. And if I ran into somebody online, that's fine. I'd strike up a conversation. That really was my only source of conversation. At this con, though, I was so much more comfortable going up to people and talking. And again, that's a great way to get us comic geeks out of our damn shell, you know? Is just go out there and talk to people, because these people are friendly. They're into what you're into. And if they happen to be somebody who's not friendly, say thank you very much and move on to the next person, because the next person, I guarantee you, will be a friendly person. And that's what these cons are all about, meeting new, interesting, nice, just intelligent people who share the same interest as you. And it's hard to find that in this world.
Agreed, yeah.
I hope that was nearly as profound as what Sean said.
It was only three quarters as profound. I'm sorry to tell you.
Sean gets the no prize.
No, but that kind of goes back to the summary of what I was saying, which was that podcast in general, but, I mean, it does expand to everything else. I mean, it expands to just internet fanfare and also to, you know, the conventions themselves. It's just making the world smaller for us, and what Sean said about it being a community is a great example of that. I mean, or it's a great way to say it again, or a better way to say it, I should say, because I told the story a few times over the weekend, so some of you might have heard this, but I remember my mortgage lender, the person who, you know, set us up with the loan to buy our house, she was asking me and my wife what we did for a living. And Kiki, my wife, said, you know, oh, he draws comics. And she actually said, oh, they still make those?
Oh
my gosh.
Yeah, she was complete. Now, no. I mean, I was surprised. I started laughing because it was so funny to me. My whole world, my brain works as a comic book filter. Everything I see, I try to apply to comics. Everything is comic books to me. You know, when I go to see a movie, I try to think, how can I use that for comics? Or, you know, why does that visually work for a movie but not work for a comic? Or how can it work for a comic even better? When I listen to music, that same energy, you know, it's all about comics. And so to hear that outside perspective, which is fine. I mean, I'm not faulting her or whatever. It was just like someone still thinking that the world was flat. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I thought that was really funny. So anyway, in growing up, it was very much that same way. You know, none of my family was into comics. So yeah, this is a great time for me to be a professional or to be into comics, because I don't feel like it's I don't feel like a pariah. I would still be into comics even if I were a pariah, but it's nice not to have to be one.
Well, I think, you know what it is, and you get more out of them now. Yeah, that's really what it is. And I honestly want to applaud the creator community in the sense that you guys have become a part of podcasts by your willingness to, you know, acknowledge us by stopping onto a podcast and chatting with us, giving us a work day.
I know when we were recording all those shows, Sean, me, you, and Jim, I could just imagine, you know, your wife going, there's no way you guys were on, you know, on recording that long, you know, because that was kind of the overall feeling that I think my wife was giving. Because as she walked in and out of the room, she was like, you know, she'd still see me on the phone, and she'd just kind of, you know, not judgingly, but just kind of shake her head like, I can't believe you guys are still on the phone.
You know, Freddie, I hope to God my wife thought that I was recording during that whole time, because I was alone in my small comic room with Jim. So
That's the line of the night.
Yeah.
And Jim's going to listen to this episode and say, thank God we were recording.
Wow. Now she has to listen.
But Freddie, does your editor get pissed off when they realize that you spend 30 hours a week on podcasts?
No, because I have either been on time or early with all my deadlines, so that they don't, you know, I'm also very quick to, you know, if there's any corrections or patches or whatever that I have to do, I'm always really fast with those too. So I don't think that they have much to care about negatively, you know what I'm saying? So
remember that, kiddies, deadlines are good.
That's right.
Yes.
Looking well, right at you, Jim.
Well, deadlines themselves actually are good in a way, because if you know, like, let's say, you know, each of us was a millionaire and we had nothing pushing us or nothing making us do what we do for a living or whatever, would you still have the passion to do what you want to do? I'm talking about specifically comic book professionals. And some people might just, you know, if they have no real need to, they would just maybe draw occasionally but never really come out with what they want to. So deadlines can push you. But specifically hitting those deadlines, I mean, that's probably the biggest, you know, once you get your foot in the door of comic books, the next big hurdle, and it's a hurdle you have to hit basically every day, is to keep hitting your deadlines. You know, if you slack off on that, you can really, you know, you can undo all the work you've done to try to get yourself in, and then, and even more, you know, basically where you're in the hole. Now you can't get a job and you have a bad reputation, so that's not good.
And like you said, with that motivation, you know, that's the difference between somebody phoning it in and somebody delivering something really special.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. I mean, it's very apparent when somebody phones in something.
Oh,
but
yeah.
when you pick up a comic book and there's been that care put into that comic book from everybody involved, you can just turn the page and it's like, this is cool. And that's what this is all about.
Oh, man. Let's go into swag a little bit here, because I'm sure we all came away with stuff that we very much enjoyed. Sean, what was in your swag bag for the weekend?
Oh, boy. I mean, look at my swag bag. I picked up a lot of stuff from Artist Alley. You know, as I was going around different, you know, independent books that were out there, I got, actually, because I wanted Neil Adams to sign it, I bought the whole run of Green Lantern, Green Arrow, because I found it at, which I already have it in trade.
Yeah.
But it was... there was one of the tables down on the floor that had sets. So I picked that up. I picked up, they had the Booster Gold run, which I'd never read.
Ooh.
And I've been enjoying Booster Gold so much in 52 that I'm like, all right, I want to see. And that's the funny thing. Once you get into a character for something, I don't care how good or bad it was. I want to go back and read it. And I'm not saying that it was bad. I've never read Booster Gold. So I'd actually like to go through and read that whole run now and enjoy that. So I actually, that was about it. You know, I picked up some single issues that I wanted signed, but I agree with you that overall there weren't a lot of, like, a lot of times, you know, the comic floor for me is a spot where with those dollar bins, I start filling in runs, and there weren't a lot of dollar bins out there to grab runs from. I had a list with me with the intention of going down there and spending some time, but I mean, there was a lot to look at when you went down on the show floor. So, I mean, I enjoyed the show floor, but I didn't see as many. That's something I'd really like to see for next year, is for just something to bring in some more retailers, because what was there wasn't bad. I'd just like to see more.
Yeah.
So.
Plus, also there was one guy who, and again, this was only one person, but this always peeves me a little bit. There was one guy who was selling obvious bootlegs of certain series, and most of the series he was selling was stuff that is not on DVD yet, but he was selling some stuff like the X-Men animated series from the 90s, and that one, sure, it's not in season sets, but it is available in certain DVDs. And I'm the type of guy who doesn't like to see too many of the whole bootleg thing at a convention. So that's one thing that also peeved me a little bit on the floor. But that's, again, something that you're going to get plenty of that at a convention. So I understand that it's there, but I'm happy that there was only, like, one person that was doing it.
I have a question. How do people who are bootlegging those things get away with it without somebody busting them? I mean, it's obvious. I've seen bootleg stuff at conventions before. I've never reported it or whatever, but is it because nobody reports it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it actually depends, because sometimes it's the fact that the police aren't really looking, and other times it's that people aren't reporting. So,
well, also, these guys also happen to supply us with, you know, those fan-made movies. Like, I picked up Batman Dead End from one of these guys. I thought, you know, that Batman with the... yeah, that's a really good movie. So there are positives and negatives to those guys. Like, I don't like that they have some of these bootlegs sometimes, but sometimes the con is the only place you can get certain things.
Well,
so.
There was one guy who was actually giving those fan-created stuff for free with purchase of stuff $20 or more. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's cool.
Because the stuff that you were purchasing was all legitimate.
You know, I don't care what anybody says. $200 for the entire run of $6 million man is highway robbery.
Yeah, no. That's not cool.
Because I asked. Because I asked because I wanted it, because you can't find that anywhere. And that was way too much.
Yeah, three or four years ago, I got the entire Adventures of Superman run for $110, and then I hear it's on DVD, and I'm like, oh.
Hey, I admit that back in the early days of me, you know, wanting to get stuff, I actually have from eBay all on VCD the original '90s Fantastic Four series, both seasons, because I couldn't wait. But mind you, that was about 3 or 4 years before the set came out. It's not something I would have picked up at a convention, but for $40 on eBay,
they have a set now.
They do, yeah. Yeah,
I gotta pick that up.
When the Fantastic Four movie came out, they released the actual '90s Fantastic Four series. But
well, how does something like that get through the filters at eBay? What I mean is, eBay does a pretty good job of like not letting people sell stuff that, you know, there's like a whole long list of stuff that you can't sell on there.
They do a pretty good job, exactly.
Okay.
A pretty good job.
Nobody's perfect.
Exactly. Nobody's perfect. There's still going to be stuff that falls through the cracks.
You can also, if you take a look at the descriptions on some of the ones that are getting away with it, there's certain language that they use and certain words that they leave out. You know, they never at any point in time imply it that it's a bootleg.
Yeah.
And they go out of their way to make it seem like it's a commercial release. Mm-hmm. So if eBay doesn't know that, like, a series hasn't been released, like, you'll see of auctions like that, that they start off in, like, somebody selling, like, 25 of them.
Yeah.
But then, like, by the time they get to the 20th one, somebody's alerted eBay that it is a bootleg auction, and eBay will then remove them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and actually, it's sort of like how spam gets past your filters. You know how like they'll say, "Would you like some pro N instead of you know, would you like some porn?" It's that sort of thing. You gotta use the right language to get past the filters, and some people know what they're doing with that.
Yes, I would actually.
Yeah.
You would like some pro N?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because I'm selling some. It's only $40.
And you know what? I curse you for changing it to chronic timing ads, because I had you blocked.
See, chronic timing in itself sounds like an illness.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir. You have been diagnosed with a case of chronic timing.
I get myself checked every month. I use protection.
You know what? There was a really cool on the show floor. There was a really cool retailer that was selling archives and Masterworks for 40% off.
Nice.
So I ended up grabbing just this great Hawkman Archives, Volume 1. Uh-huh. It's a Joe Kubert stuff, actually. It's actually really good.
That's great.
So, I mean, it was a nice score to get that all in color.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I was the one that told you about that, Sean, I'm pretty sure.
I know, you rock.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Because it's all about me.
Not only is he uniting geeks, but he's also uniting geeks with their stuff.
And Juan, I think it's great that you're on the podcast with us. So,
oh my God, let's not get into that. But you know, Friday was good for me because I was able to get to the show floor before most of the Manhunters were gone, and
very nice.
I got myself. I filled in everything but one. I realized this when I got home. I still don't have issue 9. It's the one issue of Manhunter I am currently missing because I accidentally picked up 2 copies of issue 8. Because I already had issue 8, and I was thinking in my head, do I already have issue 8 or do I already have issue 9? So I'm still looking for issue 9. I'm probably going to have to go to eBay for that.
It's been saved, and it's ongoing, which, I mean, was a highlight for me, because book is so good.
Well, plus also the fact that it got saved immediately after I purchased all of its back issues.
Yes, magic.
So it's like wow, hey, comic timing. Comic timing.
Very nice.
It's all going full circle now.
The deal saw you buying them and said, maybe we should give it a chance.
You know. In all seriousness, though, it was mostly Bob Wayne who actually said, we've made a mistake here, let's keep this going. And the fact that he was strong enough to admit that he feels like this should be continuing, that they feel that they might have made a mistake, that was really, really great of him. And the fact that we have more Manhunter makes me really happy. I picked up Robin Year 1 and Batman Year 3, both of which storylines I've always wanted to read, and now I have them, and Iron Man 2020. So I guess years were just my thing for the con. I don't know exactly what's going on with that. But
both of those are really good, too. The Robin Year 1 and the Batman Year 3, they're both really good.
Yeah, and I've heard great things about it in the past, and now I'm really looking forward to do it. And plus, Robin Year 1, that's Chuck Dixon, right?
Wasn't that a collaboration with Scott Beatty, too?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so. Because I have Batgirl Year 1 that I really enjoyed. So I definitely
is Robin Year One the mini, or is it the first arc of the run?
I believe that's the mini.
Okay,
that was a mini that came out separately, very similar to how Batgirl was released.
All right, yeah, I remember. Okay, I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, because Batgirl Year One was a mini that eventually wrapped up, and that was that. So in general, I'm really happy with what I got. Obviously, I got the Freddie Williams sketch. That much we pretty much know, and again the Walker that. But more importantly, I was able to get Gail Simone to sign my Birds of Prey 102, which happened to be on me. I'm glad I had a Gail Simone book on me at the time, because I would have been very upset had I left those at home. And I got both George Perez and the colorist, his name escapes me at the moment, of Brave and the Bold number 1 to sign it.
Bob Wycheck.
Bob Wycheck.
No. I'm sorry, the inker.
Yeah. The colorist, I can't remember for the life of me, because I tried to get Bob Wycheck. He had actually already left for the weekend. But I got the colorist, who was actually at Bob Wycheck's booth, and I guess was sharing it with him at the time. So I was able to get him to sign it, and again, really, really nice
guys.
That was
Tom Smith.
There you go, Tom Smith. Yeah, Tom Smith and George Perez. And here's another problem that I have with the con. One quick problem here. The fact that the autographs were pretty much stuck in the corner. George Perez was sitting there by himself for most of the convention. There were like four people who knew that George Perez was right over there. He was literally hidden away in a corner where very few people would realize he was there. And this is George Perez we're talking about here. You know, a guy who normally would garner up a whole line. Mind you, I was not complaining because I got to shake his hand and I got to get the autograph. But, you know, usually they put autographs front and center.
That's where a directory would have come in handy.
Yeah.
Because if you honestly passed us, if you took a look back there, if you were somebody who just came through the Artist Alley and you came into the podcast arena and then you looked at us and wondered what we were doing there, and then you just took a look to the back, you would see all the gaming ads that were there. Yeah. And, I mean, it was very clear for anybody who was into card games and HeroClix and Warhammer and all that stuff, that's what was back there. But unless you peeked your head back there, there was no way you were knowing anybody was doing any signing back there.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because there was nothing to indicate that. I would love to see a little more signage.
And I didn't even know where George was.
Hey, I got lucky enough to find where Feedback and Fat Mama was, and I wouldn't have found that out afterwards. So.
Did you guys all watch that?
Yeah, I watched it. Who was the third? Who was the red hero with the
Major Victory. Yeah. Major Victory.
How cool was it that they were wandering around?
Yeah. That was great, because...
Yeah, that was nice.
The fact is, and again, I've said this about Who Wants to Be a Superhero in the past, it was one of the few reality shows out there that was not out there to embarrass people. Its entire thing was, are you a good person? Are you a good enough person to be a superhero? And usually, you know, we see, would you like to eat, you know, buffalo testicles? We do not want to see, are you a good enough person to be a superhero? And that's what I loved about the show. And obviously Feedback, the guy who won, I mean, he freaking worshipped Stan Lee when he was a kid, and he deserved to win. But Fat Mama also, she's a person who's out there trying to make kids happy. Same thing with Major Victory. So they're really, really nice people. I got to interview two of them on the last episode that I put up, and really, really great that they were able to come out there and appreciate the con for what it was and get to meet people.
I'm trying to decide if I'd watch a show of superheroes eating buffalo testicles or not.
Well, good question. Would one of them be Iron Man? Because if so, I'm in.
Wow.
Yeah.
No Iron Man.
Boy, did this go on to a weird tangent.
Yeah. Come on, say it, Raph. I said Iron Man. Come on, say it, Raph.
Iron Man is a douche.
Thank you.
How did you guys feel about Who Wants to Be a Superhero when you watch? I mean, I've never had a chance to talk with anybody about this show. Because Jim saw a couple of the episodes, but I mean, other than that, we haven't really, because it's, you know, obviously not a DC thing, so to speak. We never get to talk about it. I really liked it.
Yeah.
Did you guys? I mean, and there's no right or wrong answer. How did you guys feel about it?
I loved it. When I saw it for the first time, I was afraid that it was going to make us look bad. You know, I was afraid it was going to make comic geeks look like, well, geeks. you know, and play us up all for like the nerdy aspects and all that, but it really didn't. You know, sure, parts of it were obviously scripted, and sure, the guys who actually were the superheroes all seemed to have acting careers, but it didn't really matter. The fact is, the show was well done. It had interesting people that you really got to know, and it felt genuine to the aspect it needed to feel. Because, again, obviously parts were scripted. It was so obvious at times. I mean, when I can't think of the guy with the arm, the metal arm who became the villain.
Iron Enforcer or something like that?
Yeah. When Iron Enforcer, you know, first lost, and that television screen with Stan Lee pops up and says, "Say, I don't think you'd be suited to be a hero, but would you like to be a villain?" Yeah, that was totally unscripted, really.
But wait, but how cool were those special effects when they did that, too?
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to say that my opinion of the show was that it was a little hokey, it was a little corny. I was afraid that it was going to make us look, you know, make comic book people look, you know, more foolish than some people already think that we are or whatever. But what I really liked was that feedback, if I remember correctly, because it's been a little while since I've seen it, he was raised without a father.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he saw Stan Lee as basically a father figure, and I'm totally in that same boat. Like, you know, I remember hearing Stan Lee's voice on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and on the Incredible Hulk cartoon. And then I remember paying, you know, close attention to Stan Lee's soapbox and the, you know, the letters page or whatever, the comic books and stuff. So, seeing him as a father figure, I could very much identify with where feedback was coming from, but there was a lot of stuff short of feedback that I thought was pretty hokey and, you know, that while I was watching it, I was kind of rolling my eyes or whatever, but I'm glad that he won. And it was still entertaining, though. As a TV show, it was still entertaining, but
oh, yeah.
I thought there was big parts of it that were hokey.
But it was a lot of hokey. but,
yeah.
I mean, and I like that, actually. I mean, it definitely had a Stan Lee vibe to it.
I was just going to say.
You know,
say,
in the sense that it was like, you know, classic Stan Lee comics were very much the storytelling, which isn't necessarily such a bad thing, but it definitely, you're right. I get the cheesy, hokey factor was there. Just touching on, when you were touching on feedback story, how cool was Major Victory's story, too, with the daughter and all that?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was...
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how much of all this was staged and how much was... you know, actually real. Either way, I really enjoyed those moments, like with Major Victory. I really liked Fat Mama, too. Even though she would, like, stop off. Even though after every moment she'd stop off and have a donut break. I thought it was really
She's here to save the day. She'll take your food away.
But I got to say, what was it, Cheetah Woman? Was she that her name or whatever? The Monkey Woman? Monkey Woman or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, Monkey Woman, when she was running in that race and ran past the little crying girl screaming, talk about way to represent the hero community. Didn't even acknowledge the kid.
But again, it's the fact that they were going for the heroic acts that made it feel true to me. You know, that you had to prove that you were a good person in order to win this. Made it automatically better than any other reality show I've ever seen. So, yeah, there we go. Raf, did you actually catch any of it? Or
I only caught that one episode where everybody ignores the little girl. I liked it because, you know, it's something that you would do as a hero. You change, you have to make sure nobody catches you, and you have to be paying attention to people that need you. I liked that part of the episode. I didn't catch anything else. I might just rent it one night and just start watching it. I like what I've heard about it, so, and I actually kind of know one of the contestants. He works at Jim Hanley's. I think I met him once or twice. So
he works at the Staten Island Hanley's.
Yeah, and he also goes to Hunter. I think I've seen him there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So
yeah. And he was the first eliminated.
Yes, he was. I saw that. I was like, oh.
Yeah, and not only that, but everybody else had their costumes at the New York Comic Con. He just had a shirt that said Nitro.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I saw him.
Was that the first eliminator, or was it the guy that, like, wanted to merchandise dolls?
You know what? I think this might actually... Yeah, Nitro G was, if I remember correctly, the first one eliminated. I could be wrong.
Yeah, Nitro G was
though.
The first eliminated.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. He was the guy who basically got in because he works at Hanley's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freddie, did you get a chance to actually get any swag at the con? Or
let's see, other than people, there was a lot of people who were dropping off business cards. That was about it.
That works.
I don't know. I barely consider that swag because, I mean, it's like business, you know, contacts or whatever. But no, not really. you know, I was tied down to the booth most of the time, and, you know, oh, I guess we got a Hellboy shirt. Somebody dropped off a Hellboy shirt that we ended up giving to my nephew.
Oh.
I think that was about it, though.
And Ref, your swag?
I spent a lot of time at Podcast Arena, so I went down, like I said before, I went down very little. I managed to pick up the official DC encyclopedia for 40% off, which was like, turned out to be $18.
Nice.
Most of my swag comes from the raffle that Joe and Jimmy had, which was for, I think, children's literacy.
Yeah.
Actually, Sean was nice enough to give me a convention edition of 52 number one. Turns out I won another copy of that. I have a... So thanks, Sean. But thanks, Sean. I really appreciated that. I have a bunch of sketch covers for Infinite Crisis, Identity Crisis, Superman, number 204, the first Jim Lee one. I have so many trades that... I won a lot of stuff. Let's just leave it at that. I wanted to get more sketches, but for some reason my money disappeared. I don't know where I spent it on. Probably the raffle.
Food, dude.
You spent
it all on food. That's what the Javits Center is about.
Yeah, I got Athena Voltaire trade. I got a sketch of Athena Voltaire. I have a bunch of prints from people. I wish I'd gotten more sketches, especially from Freddie, because, you know, I was right there. I could have gotten sketches, but I have a few signed comics. I have a lot of signed comics. I have a Gail Simone and Mike Norton signed All New Adam number 7.
Oh, great.
And let's see, what else? I also got a bunch of free comics from people. My personal favorite right now is Love and Case by Tom Zoller. He just dropped by the table and gave me issues 1 through 3, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, man, damn, I must have missed them.
Yeah, I was actually at your table. I got a lot of free stuff all the
time. Oh, okay, so taking my free swag. No, it's all good. It's all good. Well, again, though, and this is something important for me to say here, Raph was kind enough to basically man the table for whenever Sean was away or I was away, or even when Mr. Comics Cast himself, Bruce Rosenberger, was away. He manned the table, and without his help, I mean, I would have had, you know, nobody there watching my stuff. So, and again, nobody there saying, hey, would you like to try Comic Timing or Geeks Unite or one of the other fine podcasts here? So... Raph, dude, you helped everybody out a lot, and I got to thank you for that, for definitely being around for that.
We should also give a shout-out to Gabriel, because Gabriel was there the entire weekend and doing the same thing. So it was really, you guys were incredible on helping us out as far as just, you know, getting the word out. Gabriel was passing out cards. Raph was, like, with his shirt, was, like, pumping everybody, which was great.
It was a lot of fun. I really believe in... I think comics podcasting is, like, the new center for people to get around. Like, I've always been looking for people to talk about comics with, and I had at one point talked... There's a Yahoo chat room about comics. It's kind of died down since I first went in there. Wizard had their message board, which is since gone. Newsarama's okay, but the community isn't that great. So I really think that comics podcasting is, like, the new, like, thing for people to get around with. They love comics, so I would do everything I could to support it. It's been an incredible 5 or 6 months since I've started, so it was just my way of giving back. I really enjoyed it. So I had a great time anyway. So it doesn't matter. It's not like it was work or anything. It was something I really enjoyed doing anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and also my most important piece of swag was my sign, because I was so happy.
Oh!
Yeah. I was Sean. So happy to grab that.
I have your sign. I have your Raging Bullets sign.
What Raging Bullets sign?
The sign that was hanging up at your table.
Yeah,
if you want me to mail it. It's a little wrinkled because it got squashed by, like, all the stuff I won. But if you want it, I'll send it to you.
You know, you could have put it in a tube if you brought your tube.
Yeah, you know what? That's the thing. See, I should have put in the tube, so I would have remembered the tube, and all this would have been for, you know.
I totally forgot to pick that up. Thank you so much. Yeah. You totally rock.
Because that's the best souvenir. That proves you were really there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because nobody believes me.
They just don't.
Oh, hold on. Before we get too far past it, I just wanted to. I want to give a thank you to Kiki, even though she's only a few feet away from me now. But I want to publicly thank her or whatever, because not only did she man my booth whenever I was downstairs signing up the DC booth and stuff, but she also manned Patrick Gleason's booth while he was gone. She helped Will Spertasio's wife man that booth while he was gone. And she also watched all of Simone Bianchi's stuff whenever he had to go. So, and he had a friend named Jesse who was, like, watching stuff as well, but sometimes they both had to go, so Kiki was watching all that stuff and doing a very good job of keeping track of everything. So, I mean, she was like everyone's big help, you know, while she, you know, during the convention all 3 days. So she did a great job and you know, was on top of it and didn't complain at all. So I just want to express that, too.
And incredibly pleasant the entire weekend. On Sunday, yeah. I was coming by your table and just to give you guys a hello, and she was smiling the whole weekend. I'm like, you know what? We're all exhausted. I'm sure she had to have been because she was there the entire weekend, too. And just how fun, really just a very incredibly nice person.
And it's since we're giving out thanks to people, let me just thank my girlfriend as well, because I know she probably won't even hear this because, you know, oh, she hears me enough. Why would she listen to the show? But in general, though, Chris actually, anybody who came by saw the tchotchkes I had lined around the table. Well, that was basically all her. Any like free item she had lying around or any old like poster that she had that she wasn't using, she brought with her to decorate the table, and it got a lot of people to show up. So a lot of people were basically just like, oh wow, that looks awesome, and like, oh hey, you know, we do this podcast. And I was able to hand them the cards. So without her help, the table wouldn't have been nearly as interesting to a lot of people, I'm sure. So definitely got to thank her for that. And she manned the booth at times when I wasn't around, which was definitely nice. And Matt also, we can't forget to mention Matt. Obviously, Matt was there. It was great meeting him. He was under the weather all weekend, so I understand why he was a bit quiet at times. But he was there to help us out at times as well. And his That's What She Said podcast got plenty of plugs there. So there's the thanks that I can think of off the top of my head. And I'd like to thank also Phoenix. There we go. Not Phoenix, Arizona. The person.
Yeah, I'd like to thank my girlfriend, Dark Phoenix. Yeah, did you see her walking around? She had a costume on. It was great.
Raph, stop making rumors. Stop it. It's just not cool. I'm sorry. This is gonna be Raph's last appearance here on Comic Timing. But
yeah, how many times have you threatened Brent with that?
Oh, actually, here's a good question. What was your favorite outfit that you saw anybody wearing during the con?
That's a potentially inflammatory question.
Oh, let's be nice about it here.
Yeah,
okay?
Let's
be as civil as possible and not mention, Brian and his outfit that was obviously very obscene.
Jim looked great in his dress, I thought. It was.
Whoa there.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that was, I'm sorry, that was in Atlanta.
Yes, the luggage was already checked, so he had to borrow somebody else's clothing. No, but actually, I think my favorite outfit of my favorite costume of the entire weekend was the Kingdom Come Superman. The guy who was walking around with the salt and pepper hair and the the nice he had the right coloring on the outfit, which is something that I often do not see, that darker blue. Mixed in with the Kingdom Come symbol on the chest, he looked literally like as if Alex Ross had, you know, thrown him out of the comic and he landed. It was absolutely perfect.
Maybe the costume. Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as to say that he looked identical to the Kingdom Come Superman, although he looked pretty close. I mean, for a fan costume, it was really cool. And he was also a very nice guy, too. He came by the booth and me, him and Kiki were talking for about 15 or 20 minutes or something like that. And then Kiki had asked him to, you know, she was like, can I get a picture? He was like, oh, sure. And then some jerk come up behind him and put bunny ears on him right when she snapped the picture. So we had to do another one. So I hate stuff like that. It's not that the bunny ears themselves are like unforgivable offense, but you know, the guy had no reason to do that. He was just being a jerk. Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
You'll get that everywhere, whether at a con or whether walking down a street. So
yeah. But and for me, the favorite. Let's see. I mean, there was something that struck me about a Jango Fett, because as he walked by, it sounded like a radio transmission. He was like, I heard him say, "Excuse me," like it was sounded like. Yeah, it sounded just like Jango Fett's voice. You know what I mean? So, and plus that he was polite and said, excuse me, as he walked by somebody. So, I think that was my favorite. Yeah, exactly.
So, what's your favorite, Raph?
I had a few. The Kingdom Come Superman was pretty cool. I thought the storm. Well, I think the stormtroopers were supposed to be dressed up. I'm not too sure. there was a Zatanna who was very gracious. Who was very gracious, and she posed with me for a while, as someone fumbled around with my camera. And there's obviously Dark Phoenix. I thought she looked really good. She had the hair going. She did the posing, which I thought she had that dark. You know that one Phoenix pose from that cover where her hands stretched out. She did that. I think she did it for someone else, and I saw it in a picture. She did it very well. She really had the mannerisms down, and I thought she was really good at being the character.
Yeah, well, she was really good looking, and she looked like the character. So that's definitely a plus right there.
She sold it very well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and just to let everybody know, I'm not sure whether it's going to be at Anime Boston. It might be at Anime Next, but anybody who's going to those conventions, I might very well be dressed up as Phoenix Wright at one of those. And
very nice.
I want to get the mannerisms down myself. I want to be able to scream objection at the top of my lungs at just the right time. So that's going to be fun, dressed up in the blue suit with the giant hair. But Sean, what was your favorite outfit of the con, other than Jim's dress, of course?
Yeah, well, that was in Atlanta, though, so it doesn't really count.
That's true, yeah.
But as far as at the con, I'm going to say, just first of all, kudos to everybody who was wearing costumes, because I really thought that any costume that came by or the podcast arena, people put a lot of care into those.
Yeah.
So it was actually, like, there were so many people that were taking pictures of all these costumes, and I could totally see why, because they were awesome. But the one for me that I could find myself really identifying with and relating to was Unemployed Skeletor. Who I just thought was, I just thought that was like one of the funniest things I'd ever seen. And dude was so totally into it. He was in the line. We were all shouting, "Unemployed Skeletor!" And he was like waving to people like he was a celebrity. And it was, to me, just the greatest thing in the world, because I just totally laughed at that one, because I thought it was very clever that he like not only wore a Skeletor outfit, but he tried to give it like its own special gimmick.
Yeah.
And it was just a lot of fun.
It was also great seeing Murdo dressed up like Pariah.
Oh yeah, that was terrific.
I gotta agree. Yeah,
that was terrific. The CGS guys' costumes were great, except for maybe Chrisman's underdog ears. But other than that, everything was great.
Wait, and how cool was it for Brian Deemer to come over to our table dressed up as Captain Cold doing a water ad for Raging Bullets? he said, when we got to the con on Saturday, Brian came over to our table. He starts screaming at the top of his lungs, "And here we have Raging Bullets. And they talk so much that they should be pumping water." And he started doing like Aquafina ads, and it was like the funniest thing in the world. So then he came back over later as Captain Cold selling ice cubes.
All I have to say is Mylars, baby, Mylars.
I tell you.
Well, there's another guy, I think, dressed up as a Cthulhu character, and
oh,
he had
yeah.
up a sign, and it said, "I'm sweating balls." I thought that was pretty funny.
Oh, that's great. Although, it's a shame that the Mirror Master and the Captain Cold couldn't get together for a shot.
Yeah, a rogues gallery thing.
Oh, hell yeah.
There's no Flash.
Oh, there was a Flash, actually. There was a Flash.
Really?
Yeah, there was a Flash patrolling. I saw a picture. Somebody took a picture of Flash and Blue Beetle at the same spot. I remember that.
Okay. So, oh, wait, there's a Power Girl, too.
Yeah, that was actually the Power Girl, I think. That was the Power Girl from the Power Girl movie, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, along with the Blue Beetle from the YouTube stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I've never seen somebody embody Power Girl nearly as much as she does.
Oh, yeah, she actually, I forgot to mention, she was actually very, I mean, when she posed and when she had very good, like, mannerisms, she really got into the character.
Yeah, definitely. And the outfit
really
is
cool.
Perfect, so.
Yeah, the outfit.
I almost want to edit that segment for my own show, just to have you saying, "No, Raph, that was the Power Girl."
Like, you're more than welcome to, buddy, whatever you want to do.
We're part of the multiverse?
Hey, if I put tweet on my show, you can do whatever you want with my audio. It's all good. Oh, jeez. Now, let's talk about some of the reveals that came out of the con. Specifically, obviously, we have the major reveal about Countdown, major reveals, as it were, about Countdown, which just makes me want to read the book even more. I mean, I was a bit skeptical about it at first. I was like, okay, how is this going to possibly match up to 52? I mean, it's another weekly series immediately afterwards. What the hell is going to happen? But they completely sold me. with the stuff about Jimmy Olsen and the villains and Darkseid, I'm like, okay, I am in with this series right here. There's no way in hell I am not going to pick that up. And it's already in my budget. So why the hell not? I mean, I'm just going to continue picking it up like I get the 52. It'll be 104 on my 52. So that's definitely there. What were your favorite reveals of the con? And obviously, spoiler warning out here for everybody right off the bat. What were you really happy that got revealed at the con? We'll start with you, Sean.
I'm particularly interested in the Mary Marvel thread, you know, which it looks to me like it's Eclipso's hand, the female Eclipso's hand that's coming off and touching her.
Yeah.
But when I look at that the panel that they flipped over, you actually see Mary's face is almost like Eclipso. It's like half dark, half light. Mm. So and they talked about how she's going to be finding a new mentor and going on this journey. Yeah, have you guys basically been reading what's been going on with Mary Marvel? How she's I'm guessing she's powerless.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing this is her journey to try and find her place in this universe now, mm-hmm. without powers, because I don't see her, you know, she's not in Trials of Shazam right now. That's Freddie Freeman. So I'm really curious to see what they do with this character, because I'm really enjoying that they're taking some steps to do something with the Marvel family finally.
Well, also, a spoiler warning again, last we saw she was comatose, so I mean, you know, for all we know, things are going to get better fast, and for all we know, also, it could just be a specific character that wakes her up, and from there, things go bad. So, well, it makes me very interested in that. Well, also, big reveal, obviously, Mike Norton, baby.
Yeah.
Mike Norton, DC exclusive. Hell frickin' yeah.
And if you're not already reading All New Adam, you should be.
Yeah,
I got a great sketch from Mike Norton, speaking of sketches, of the all-new Adam. And I told him, I said, same thing I told Freddie. I said, you know, I'd love to tell you something more original, but I love your Robin. I said the same thing with Mike Norton about all-new Adam. I'm like, I want an Adam from you. Because that is such a fun book.
Yeah.
It's got all the best elements of Silver Age, but written very today. And if you're not reading all-new Adam, do yourself a favor and go out and grab it. Because it's a great book, and it's going to be leading into the big reveal of they're going to do the hunt for Ray Palmer,
yep.
or, you know, the search for him, and he's going to be playing a big part in the countdown, which I'm excited to find out where Ray is.
He's under my bed. I've been hiding him.
On a side note, Mike Norton is a very, very nice guy as well. So I know you guys know that, but for any listener who might not, you know, sometimes if you find out the personality of the artist and they end up being a jerk or something like that, at least for me, it can make me, you know, I'll still buy the book if it's a good art or whatever, but it just makes me not very happy about it and makes me maybe not want to follow their stuff as much. But Mike Norton is definitely a really cool guy and is very appreciative of the opportunity that he's being given. And that's the kind of guy who I want drawing my books. Or, you know, drawing the books that I buy.
Well, this is good because the artists on the book have now gone full circle. You know, they've gone from John Byrne to Mike Norton, so it's all good.
Wait, and tell me his personality and his drawing style and what he's done in the past with books like Gravity doesn't totally fit the all-new Adam book.
Oh, no question.
Yeah,
I mean,
perfect.
I mean, talk about like a perfect person to put on that book. It just so fits him that I think we're just going to see a whole lot of fun out of that book.
Without a doubt, yeah. And, I mean, he's already doing it already with the few issues that he's done, and I can't wait to see more. He's the reason why I continue picking it up. I'm a big fan of Gail Simone, but the fact that there was a different artist on every single issue of that was getting me off for a while. But once Mike came on, I'm like, bam, I'm sold on this. And when I found out he's going to continue, I'm like, I'm staying here. So he certainly has kept me on All New Adam.
We love Gail.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. You. Hell yeah.
I got to meet her.
Anything she touches turns to gold. No question about that. And I'm glad that from the sound of things, we're going to get some more Secret Six in the future as well. Whether it be in their own book or whether it be in Birds of Prey, we're at least going to get some Secret Six coming soon. So that's definitely a plus. Raph, what was your favorite reveal?
Quite a few things. Actually, going back to Mike Norton, I actually promised Mike Norton before that DC Nation panel that I would bring him up at the panel. And I was the first person to ask a question, and it totally slipped my mind to do it. So Ian went up to bat, and he decided to ask the question. So we have Ian to thank for the Mike Norton news. If you're listening out there, you should thank Ian, because I totally dropped the ball. I forgot about it.
You're welcome.
So yeah, definitely.
You're welcome.
That was cool. But yeah.
It was just nice to get the news out there because CGS had hinted at me. They were like, and there's going to be some Mike Norton news. I'm like, oh, dude. So right away I had to ask them what's upcoming for Mike Norton, and that's what came out. So I'm glad that they were able to reveal that. Any other reveals that you were happy about, Raph?
Darkseid. I'm really looking forward to Darkseid stepping up as the big bad guy because I've seen enough. I mean, I love Lex Luthor and I love Superman, but I've seen a lot of Lex Luthor the past 2-3 years, and I would love to see someone else step up to that A-level like villain list. You know, it'd be great to see Darkseid again. As for anything else, Manhunter not being canceled is a nice bit of news.
Yeah.
Also, finally finding out where Ray Palmer is. Hopefully, he won't take over Ryan Choi's place because there are not enough Asian superheroes in comics. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's about it. I mean, I only went to 2 panels. Oh, also, no, Dan DiDio making his little mistake there.
Ooh, big spoilers here. Big spoilers before we go into it. Okay.
Yeah. DiDio revealing that Red Robin is Jason Todd. And Flash is Barry Allen on that teaser poster that's currently all over the comics and all over DC's comics. Like it's a 2-page splash. You see a Flash there. You'll see you see Red Robin from Kingdom Come there. That's Jason Todd and Barry Allen. So that was huge. And I didn't make it in time, but I would have loved to have seen DiDio's face when he realized he screwed up. I heard it was priceless.
Oh
yeah. Those are my moments.
And what was Rucka's line afterwards? I forget. It was something along the lines of Who would you like to kill off in the DC universe? And he's like he points to DiDio right and says, "I'm looking right at him."
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, so there you go, mess ups there. What are you gonna do, Freddie? I know that you heard a lot of it secondhand, but what was your favorite reveal at the con?
See, I think it was probably the DiDio slip and the Mike Norton one. It was also flattering and pleasing to have my commission list fill up within like the first hour and a half each day. That was a nice reveal to me, just that anybody would be interested, or that many people would be interested to, you know, hit me up so early in the morning and stuff like that. But I think that you guys already hit on some good ones, though.
Well, I'm just glad I got to you fast. For my sake, I'm just glad I got there first, man. Damn! Wow! Damn!
Oh,
man.
Oh, you know what was another reveal that I thought was particularly interesting? They hinted at the possibility of All-Star Squadron being released in showcase format.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
That would be really cool.
It was kind of one that I know we didn't talk about on our show, but I had just read up on it that they were saying, based on how successful some of the older Justice Society appearances are right now, that they're considering the showcase treatment for those particular issues.
Yeah.
And how cool would that be to be able to collect those in those phone book volumes?
Oh, sure, definitely. And also to those other guys, you know, those Marvel people that over in the other offices had some good reveals also. I mean, the fact that there's going to be a new Warriors coming soon, I knew that it was coming, but that one teaser shot they actually showed us, that really looked like a female Speedball. So it's making me think that there's going to be some sort of, you know, rebellion, like youth rebellion, as it were, and the new Warriors are going to be a part of it, you know, anti-Civil War, as it were, anti-registration.
And then Penance will stop them all.
Penance! jeez. In general, though, I'm glad to see the new Warriors back. I've always been a fan of them, and that's going to be good. And there's also hinting that there might be more Gravity to come, specifically in Dwayne McDuffie's Fantastic Four run. We might get some hints as to what's happened to Gravity, because I'm not going to spoil anything about what happened to him in the past, but we might get to see more Gravity in the future, which is certainly a plus for me. Even though both of his creators are gone, at least the character is hopefully going to live on, which is nice. And one other reveal that I remembered.
Real Thor.
Oh, Real Thor, obviously.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah, seeing the first shots of what the new Thor's outfit looks like. Oh, wow. He looks like he should for once. You know, he doesn't look like a superhero. He looks like a Norse god.
Yeah.
Who's attached to Real Thor?
Real Straczynski. Thor is Straczynski and
Coipel,
yeah.
Yes.
Oliver Coipel.
I think Straczynski will be a good fit on that book.
I think so too, yeah. The fact that he introduced so many of those mystical elements in Spider-Man proves that he can do it. So with Thor, it's a natural fit, basically.
Yeah, that'll probably be a trade I'll seek out to read some of that.
Yeah. And, oh, Nova. Nova's ongoing. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Oh, baby. And the fact that we're going to have the meetup between Penance and Nova pretty soon will make me very happy, even though it's freaking Penance. Rrr. God.
Every the single of my soul is black.
Every single time Speedball goes to pee, he gets hurt. Jeez.
Wow. Well,
it's true, though. I mean, come on. He has spikes everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah, I know. Ugh. It's... So does he even take the suit off ever to, like, shower?
I certainly hope so for the sake of personal hygiene, but I don't know.
Forget that. I mean, he's got, like, 6,000 infections all over the place, you know, from all the stab wounds.
I think my favorite one was the parody of Civil War Frontline that came out where he was like, "Yeah, I told you not to put the spikes on the inside."
Yeah, that was great.
Oh, that was good. Yeah, no, plenty of great reveals to come out of that. But I think we're almost at the end of the episode here. I don't want to make things too long here, but let's actually go for expectations for 2008 here. We've mentioned some improvements you'd like to see, but give us some more stuff that you yourself would like to do in 2008 and see in 2008. And again, this is happening in April, which automatically means my complaint about the frickin' wind isn't going to happen anymore. So hopefully, unless we get April showers. But Freddie, what improvements would you like to see, and what would you like to see, period, out of 2008 of New York Comic Con?
Like what you were mentioning, I just want it to be warmer, for good God's sake. And then I'd like to not be sick whenever I go to the convention. Mm-hmm. And if possible, I'd like to have my own booth. No offense to anyone, but it would be nice to, you know, to be able to spread out and not be so cramped or whatever. And let's see, what I don't want to see is that I don't want it to, like, you know, quintuple in size or something like that. And I don't want to see it, like, go nuts with, like, non-comic book oriented media or something like that, where it's like, you know, three-fourths of it. I just don't want it to go as far as San Diego has, you know, because we already have a San Diego, and I want this, you know, for me, for my own personal selfish reasons, I just want this to be a good, strong, fantastic comic book convention and not, you know, not go on the other route. So I think that's about it for me.
And yet again, you can blame the plague on Freddie. Just to let everybody know about that. The plague is,
no. Dude, I'm still sick. I'm still sick even now. I've still got a cold. I've still got a, you know, sinus stuff going on. So it is my fault. I'm sorry.
I feel your pain. As a man who grew up with very bad sinuses, I feel your pain. Sean, what would you like to see out of 2008?
You know, it's just really tiny things. Like I said, I really had a lot of fun at the con, and I echo completely what Freddie said as far as it not going too much into mass media. I don't mind if it gets bigger, but as it gets bigger, as long as they're proportional, like if you're adding a mass media thing on, add some more comic content on there. You know, just make sure you keep that balance and never forget that you're a comic convention.
Yeah.
I think it's nice for a convention to be wearing that badge, like this is a comic convention, because, you know, we should be proud of this industry, and it's that to me was a highlight of this one. I really felt at all times this was a comic book focused convention, and I'd like some signage, just you know, a little directory somewhere, more signs on where signings are. The panels were a little bit hard to find.
Once
you knew where one was, you were good to go. So, in fairness, they were all in one area. Just a couple little signs and things like that. I thought overall, though, from everything I heard from the year before, I felt that this was really just – it was so much better than what I expected from the horror stories that I heard from the year before, that it was apparent to me that they listened and that they were really trying to improve it. And I have a funny feeling that next year we're going to see even more improvements building off of comments that they got from this year, because they really seem to care about making this one of the best cons around.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, it's like any con. Are there some things we can talk about that you know, are with any type of growing pains? Absolutely. But I thought overall it was just a really well put together show, and I have a lot of confidence that we're going to see a lot of improvements for next year, just as many as we saw this year.
Well,
so
one thing about New York Comic Con that people they compare it to San Diego all the time, and right away I got to say, people have mentioned this to me in the past also. The main difference between New York and San Diego is that San Diego was run by a non-for-profit organization. New York Comic Con is run for a profit organization. And you can tell, actually, by the way that the staff is, that it's for profit. They want to improve this so that they will make a profit in the end, because that's what they're trying to do. So obviously, last year didn't work out nearly as well as they wanted it to. They improved it this year. Next year will hopefully be even more of an improvement so that they can make more money off of this. San Diego is pretty much the same every year because it's a non-for-profit run by fans. This is a profit run by a company. That's the major difference between San Diego and New York. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but that's the difference right there. And it can be apparent sometimes, a little more apparent than it should be, but it's there. So that's what I'm saying right there, and I hope that makes a little sense. I hope.
And one other wish for 2008 is that Skeletor gets employed.
Yeah. Signing autographs. Yeah, obviously. Everybody wants to get an autograph from a washed-up animated villain. Yeah. Woohoo. Ref, what do you want to see out of 2008?
A couple of things. I think that they should use the space they used last year for Artist Alley. Artist Alley needs to be bigger. They need to have more artists there. I need to have a table next year. That would be very nice to have a table. That's only I have to put up my end of the bargain. I have to put like 100 episodes up before then. I would
100?
Also, well, you know, a significant number. I don't know about 100, maybe 50, but
there you go.
Also, I think that it should be about, I think, maybe 80, 90 days max. Be there for 3 months. That's the time of my life. No, I mean, I heard on CGS someone mentioned that it should be 4 days long, and I wouldn't mind seeing that eventually. I think it's still too early on for that. I do kind of want this to become sort of a San Diego East, but not to the extent. I think San Diego should be hands down the biggest con of the year. But that New York should become pretty big, maybe even surpassing the Wizard World cons, because I think New York is a special city. We have Marvel here, we have DC here, we have a lot of things going on here in terms of media and everything. I think it should be a very big con, and it should have this sort of prestige, but I don't think it needs to go to the level where San Diego is. And there, you're right, it is a for-profit thing. I'm just a little worried about that eventually when it gets so big where they're like, okay, Podcast Arena, you guys, $100 a table. You know, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I definitely do want to see it doesn't have to get, like, 8 times as big next year. But, you know, just a little bit of progress. You know, move slowly. Don't move too quick. And I think they're doing that. I think they realized that last year was way too small and that they need to slowly improve. And they have been improving. So I'm really excited for next year.
Well, I don't think the $100 a thing is really going to happen because, again, they're getting promotion out of us, and that's what's important to them. So hopefully that will continue to be the case. But, well, I've stated this already, and I want to state it again. My main things I want to see out of 2008, nicer security guards, because, again, that helps. It makes the entire con friendlier and at peace. So definitely nicer security guards that are not afraid to tell you where to go with the word please and thank you. Okay? Don't make New York look bad.
Yeah.
Because that's another problem that I've had, that they perpetuate those New York stereotypes that aren't really true. And people who might have just been coming in for New York would see these security guards and think, oh, everybody's all, you know, angry and upset all the time. Why would I bother talking to anybody the entire con? No, that shouldn't be the case. So nicer security guards, number one. Number two, reiterating what Sean said, a little more signage, get a little more of what's going on. Change where the autographs are being done, or at least make it more prominent that they're being done there, or else, again, you're going to have George Perez trapped in a corner. It's not going to be George Perez because he's taking a few years off, but you get the idea. And also, I guess you know, I'm kind of for moving the artist alley downstairs again, but I'm kind of also not, because I like where it is now. But I'd actually like to see, and I don't know whether or not this is possible, but let's get two aisles for the artist alley as opposed to three. Because that third aisle made things the hardest to go down. And I don't know whether or not, again, maybe if you moved it downstairs it would be possible, but get two aisles as opposed to three. That way there's plenty of room for people to move around, and you're not stuck and crunched in nearly as much as you were with that third middle aisle. So that's pretty much all I can really say that I would want to change. And yeah, I mean, other than that, damn good convention. So
how about Atlanta on Friday?
Yeah. Let's check
for the
that.
for the con.
Oh
no,
yeah.
No. Let's move the con to Atlanta, because when I'm traveling from Ohio to New York, it's much easier to get there via Atlanta. So if we could just have like the Friday portion of it in Atlanta, it would be much easier for me. Then we can move. Then everybody could all, as a community.
What would have made it even
again
better,
keeping the community theme? If we could, as a community, then all move to New York together in time for the Saturday show, that would be awesome. So
what would have been really, really awesome would be if there would have been some creator, any creator, on that flight with you, and they see you podcasting, and they hear the words Raging Bullets, and they're like, oh, Raging Bullets is here? What?
Dude, I don't care what creator was in the airport. The way people were looking at us, nobody was coming up. My mother wouldn't have come over and said hello to me. People were looking at us like we were nuts. So
it's like the following secrets are for the terrorists. 8572-9437. I don't know why I gave him a French accent, but
I don't know either. I was just letting you go.
Although New York Comic Con was also great for another reason, is that Chris actually ran into the same crotchety old man who was on her flight in San Diego, and he's a creator. But he's so crotchety that he's one of those old men that's like, get away from my compost heap. He's got that total personality going on. And there he was again at New York Comic Con. And Chris waved to him, and he was just sort of like, yeah, and kept on moving. So that made the weekend for us right there. So it's definitely all good. It's all good. But yeah, I think we've thoroughly, you know, drilling this into a hole since Sean talked about it already, and Raph and I talked about it already, and Freddie talked about it already. I think we're pretty much set here. So, you know, once again, Freddie, thanks for joining us for the first time on Comic Timing. It's been an honor having you on, buddy, and thanks for sticking with us on the cell phone like you did, and definitely would love to have you on in the future.
Excellent, and thanks again for having me on. I'm sorry for the confusion on the times and all that stuff. I just want to say, you know, that it's clearly my fault, and I apologize for it.
Dude, no worries. We're all alive, and we're still good, and it's still early enough to still get a few hours sleep out of it, so it's all good.
You know what? I got to say, though, I'm not buying Robin 160 now. That's tough love.
See, but little do you know, he's just going to make Jim buy a second copy.
There you go.
Very clever.
Yes, indeed. You got anything upcoming you want to fill us in on, Freddie, or just the fact that 160 is coming out next month?
Oh, yeah, I'm currently working on issue 15 of Blue Beetle, the fill-in, and it guest stars Superman. I got to say, I mean, I am, like I was saying earlier, you know, I was raised without a father, and, you know, Stan Lee was a father figure, Batman was a father figure, Superman was, you know, probably the biggest father figure, though, as far as, you know, presenting or laying out morals and treating power with respect. And, I mean, you can tell from the Raging Bullets, you know, two-part Richard Donner review or whatever, how much thought I've put into a lot of that stuff, how big of a deal Superman is to me. So to draw Superman, I was having the sensation earlier today whenever I was working on the roughs for the pages of, like, I was meeting, I don't know, it was like this surreal feeling that is a total geeky sort of thing, that as I was drawing him, I felt like I was meeting my father in a way. It was like this weird emotional thing. I can't even really describe it, but anyway, I'm very excited about that, because, you know, my first time drawing Superman professionally, That's pretty much it. I mean, as soon as I get done with Blue Beetle 15, which will be next week, then I'll be jumping right on to Robin 164. So that's about it.
Just out of curiosity, where do you take your references for Superman? I mean, do you draw more in a Reeves style or more in a comic style?
Definitely in a comic book style. I was considering doing like a caricature of Reeves, but the way it is now, I think I'd like to, because, you know, in the rough stage, I'm alluding to his body type, but I'm not, you know, getting super tight yet. You know, over the next couple of days, I'll kind of have to figure it out for myself. But I'm shooting for a guy who's not, like, when you look at a bodybuilder from nowadays, they've been on low carb diets for months and months to get that physique, where it's like they're just so incredibly ripped, you know, there's like no fat in between the muscle and the skin. And there's a certain character type that could fit that sort of musculature, but I don't really buy that for Superman, because Superman doesn't have to have gigantic muscles to do what he does. He is just infused with the power of the yellow sun. So I picture him more as like the sort of George Reeves sort of physique, where maybe a little trimmer than that, but just, he still has muscles, but he's more about, you know, he doesn't necessarily have a fully defined six-pack and fully defined, his rib cage isn't necessarily all the way showing. It's like, he's just a robust-looking figure, and that's what I'm going to shoot for. And definitely very kind, and especially the way that Jay Torres wrote this script. He's definitely a diplomatic character in this situation. I've seen some situations or in some comics where it seems a little out of character for him to be so savage. Yeah. You know, he's kind of savage right out of the gate, and I don't so much buy that. That's not the Superman I know. I think that the one in Blue Beetle, though, is the one that I know. So that's why one of the many reasons I'm so excited to do it.
Well, I'll definitely be picking up the issue. And also, just remember, Superman always has to have a fruit pie in his back pocket just in case he runs into any villain who could be distracted by it. So.
What on earth? Where did you get that from?
I'm just thinking of the days, man, when they have like the Hostess ads and the fruit pies.
Oh, okay,
DC,
I get
Marvel and all that. You always got to have one hidden in the back pocket.
I was picturing an entire pie, like a pie pan and everything. I'm like, why? But that makes a little more sense, I guess.
No, he heat visions it and he throws it at the guy's face.
Oh.
Teach him a lesson.
That's pain, man. Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, like I said, I'll definitely be picking it up, man. And and as always, thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join in on yet another podcast. So you're making the rounds, buddy. You're making the rounds.
My pleasure. I really enjoy it.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. Sean, you want to give us a quick update on what's upcoming on Raging Bullets?
Actually, this is perfect timing after this to jump on to our Back to the Bullets Robin episode with Freddie Williams, which is so. I mean, this is you could never have too much Freddie. Seriously, he is a phenomenal guest, and we had a great talk about Robin, which is a title that Jim and I have both been long before we talked to Freddie, talking about how great the book is. You get a chance to not only listen to us tell you why it's such a great book, but to hear Freddie give us some special insider commentary onto the book. Yeah. And we, like I said, we have a very special treatment of issue 159 that I think people are really going to enjoy.
Freddie Williams, never heard of him.
Ouch.
Who's that schlub?
And you got your one-year anniversary coming up, right?
Yeah, actually, March 22nd is going to be 1 year of Raging Bullets, so... I'll announce it here because we've already decided on what our episode's going to be. Our listeners have been begging for Justice League Unlimited to do something with it. So we are going to do something with that. And we had another suggestion. As long as we're doing Justice League Unlimited, why don't we talk Super Friends too? So Woo-hoo! We are going to, we're going to talk both. We're going to do, and there might even be some chat about Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog in there as well. So, we're going to have, we're going to have a lot of fun that episode. But
as long as Gleep is there, I'll be happy.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely doing that. Because we're gonna touch on the Legion of Doom stuff. Yeah. Because just to compare it with Justice League Unlimited and how they handled it. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that episode. I'm really excited for it. And I can't believe it's already 1 year almost.
Oh,
so.
Definitely. And you know what? It's almost 1 year for me, too. I'm realizing that now. And because we didn't start too much later after you guys. So we're only about a month and a half after you guys. I'll have to double check on the exact date because I think I know what I'm going to do as my topic for that. But probably by next episode, I'll let everybody know for certain what that's going to be. But I'm almost positive what it's going to be. It's going to be related to time. That much I will definitely know. That's the hint I'll give you. But it's a topic that's been suggested in the past, and it's a very interesting topic.
You know what? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
That's fine.
I had a question for Raph, actually. I was thinking about the fact, you know, with him being a new podcaster now, how are you enjoying podcasting? I know Geeks Unite's out there. I'm liking what you're doing. How are you enjoying being a part of all this now and doing the podcasting thing? How's that working out for you?
It's been a lot of fun. I've only done one official episode. I gotta admit, the editing is the hardest part. I don't know how you do it, Sean. You work and then you're up at 4 o'clock in the morning editing every day, and I had to do that for a week, and it just totally wrecked me. It's a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. It's a great experience, and talking to someone, having a conversation with someone about comics and enjoying it, and it's a totally new experience. It's something that I never expected to do this in my entire life. It's so interesting. It's having that dynamic with someone, and then having people tell you they listen to you and enjoy you talking to, like, listening to you talk about stuff. It's really cool.
Well, I'm going to have both members of Geeks Unite on eventually on this at the same time.
Yeah, we'll have a crossover.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, after a while, you're going to know exactly what your sounds like in waveform.
Oh, I do. I have it memorized. My ums, uhs, and
you know. Yeah. But the editing does get easier over time, man. Just letting you know, okay? It definitely gets easier over time.
Yeah.
You'll still be up until 4, though.
No, I can imagine.
But yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah, by the way,
yeah,
your episode 1 came out May 1st, 2006.
There you go. May 1st, 2006. So we're only 2 months away now, actually. So in 2 months, we'll have ourselves that next episode. And it's going to be damn close to 50 for me also. So,
wow.
Yeah. Holy poop.
That's something.
Well, not that close to 50. It'd be more close to 45, but anyway. Yeah, so there we go with that. And one more thing, actually. Raph, do we have a Geeks Unite coming soon, please?
I'm supposed to be recording this Saturday with Juan and Freddie Williams, if I can find Freddie Williams.
Great.
Where's
Waldo?
Freddie, I don't have your contact information, so I hope Juan does, and I'm hoping he gets back to me, so we'll do it Saturday night. We'll probably post it up sometime Wednesday.
Freddy's Nightwing BK in the forums, so.
No. And also, my birthday's coming up, and so is CGS's, and I just sent them a message for their birthday episode. That's March 7th. So I should be on CGS as an audio comment, and that's it. I don't think I have anything else on the podcasting front, unless Sean wants me to come on sometime.
Oh
no, wait, there's a contest for that.
You've already been on.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you made your Raging Bullets appearance already, you know?
Does that mean I'm out of the contest now?
No.
I mean, well, how does that make you out of the contest?
Well, because I've already been on. It's like I've already won.
Okay, Raph.
No. That's a contest is completely separate ballgame.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to be making my submission hopefully soon, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to do 6 more daily columns, and I'll do it anyway.
One other thing I actually want to shout out, especially because Freddie's on right now, our episode 50 is we're going to do Seven Soldiers. So if you haven't heard that we're doing that, that is going to be our multi-part episode 50 extravaganza, because we figured it's a big episode, so we're going to do something very big. And this is going to be the biggest thing we've done on Raging Bullets. But we're going to do the complete Seven Soldiers. So I have no idea what that's going to look like yet. But
it's going to be 2 months of 10-hour podcast.
I think I remember you talking about that, though, because it's like Jim is going to approach it from the way that it's bundled in the trades, and you're going to approach it the way it was published.
Okay, I'm going to do it the way it was published, and Jim actually has already been reading it in the miniseries. So, like, he read Manhattan Guardian together. He read Mr. Miracle together.
Yeah.
So, and we're going to talk about the different experiences we have depending on the way that we've read it.
Yeah.
So,
I myself have actually only read Manhattan Guardian and Zatanna. So I'm thinking that I might pick up at least hopefully the first two trades. I'm going to listen to the episode anyway because I know that I'm probably not going to read all of them, but I want to at least get your guys' take on it. And that is going to be at least 87 hours of content right there. So
I heard that there's a phenomenal artist on the second part of Mr. Miracle.
Really? Reggie B. Williams, right?
J.H. Williams III. No, it's me. I did 6 pages in issue 2, and then I did all of issue 3 and 4.
Oh, Freddie, don't forget to pimp your website.
Oh, yeah. Please come by and check out my website at freddieart.com. I've got tons of preview art on there, like all the art, all of the comics that I have on my site have at least a five page preview.
Nice.
For each issue, and there's, I don't know, probably at least 30 comics or something like that on the site. So quite a bit of content, is even if you just want to browse, and it's, you know, all the, you know, if you want to look at the previews, they're all free. And then I've got also how you can buy the comics and even commission pricing that I just added a couple weeks ago. So
great.
Yeah, check that out. And I'm also, so that's freddieart.com, and I'm also on MySpace under Freddie Art and on Comic Space under Freddie Art. So
awesome.
Yeah, come and take a look.
You'll be getting a friend invitation from Comic Timing sometime in the near future, so it's all good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and also, I actually want to make a hint towards my episode 50 because I realize that I'm already in the planning stages for this, and the hint is reunion. So those are my two hints. The first one is timing. The second one is reunion. One's for the one-year anniversary. The other one is for episode 50. So there you go with that. But once again, Geek Unite at geeksunite.libsyn.com. Bleh, as I choke over my own words. geeksunite.libsyn.com and Raging Bullets, obviously, at ragingbullets.com. And everybody, thank you for joining me here, and I will wrap this episode up. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum, graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please dig us on dig.com, and please vote for us on Podcast Alley. There is a huge list of podcasts you can dig and vote for on Podcast Alley on the Comic Timing forum, so go ahead and check that out. And please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes if you get a chance. That would be graciously appreciated. So once again, guys, thank you kindly for joining me. It's been absolutely wonderful talking to you guys, and I hope to see you next year at New York Comic Con.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No problem, man. And as always, there's always time for comics.
Is your episode 50 Knight Rider 2000?
Yes, actually.
Wow. I want to be on that one. I'm going to be on that one.
No, actually, it's the Brady Bunch reunion.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it works nice. We get a touching scene between Greg and Jan, who haven't seen each other for years.
Oh, Lord.
I'm starting to frighten myself now. That will probably end up in the back of the episode right there. That is not going to be the full episode.
Wait, this is the 2:30 in the morning giddies.
Oh, yeah, really. See, finally, you get to experience the 2:30 in the morning giddies on this show, all right?
You know, we've had this, like, me and Aina are veterans at this.
I'm about to go through a lowland area, so it's possible that it could cut out. There's only one lowland area, basically, and it's possible it could stick around. But if in a second you're like, Freddie, are you there? That's the reason. And there's really nothing I could do about it or whatever. I'm just letting you know. So.
All right.
All right, cool.
As long as you let me know when the dance is over.
So, Freddie.
Yeah.
Freddie, you're saying there can be only one lowlander? Highlander. Nobody watches Highlander. Nobody gets the reference.
No.
What is delivery?
No. That delivery was so dry. It was perfect. That was such a dry delivery. That was great.
Raph, it's either that or we're trying not to encourage you.
You don't want to sensei on you.
Oh, man.
Sensei, I'd be going, you know.
Well, Raph, you got to fill in for the sensei, man. You got to add more you knows and us into your speech. That's all.
Well, look, my dictation is perfect, okay?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know what? That
You know what? In all honesty, though, there can never be too many Highlander references.
Yeah. As long as we rehydrate the statements, that's all good.
Rehydrate.
It's not a word!